This is the Quality News Network. Israeli airstrikes killed at least 40 Lebanese today, including 33 farm workers near the Syrian border. Bombings also destroyed roads and bridges near Beirut, severing links to Syria and hampering UN efforts to deliver relief supplies. Hezbollah also fired rockets into northern Israel, killing up to 5 people. The group also fired a missile into Hadera, about 50 miles inside Israel, its deepest strike since the fighting began. Hadera is about 30 miles from Tel Aviv. Hezbollah has threatened to bomb Tel Aviv if Israel strikes central Beirut. At least 2 Israeli soldiers died in today's fighting. Tens of thousands of Shias demonstrated today in support of Hezbollah. Demonstrators threw a firebomb at the British embassy in Tehran, but no casualties were reported. Smaller demonstrations took place in countries including Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Syria. In Iraq, 2 more U.S. Marines were killed in separate incidents in the Anbar province. That brings the total number of U.S. military deaths there this week to 12. Dozens more died in other violence today around the country. 3,500 U.S. troops are being redeployed to Baghdad to help with the security there. Also in Iraq, a military prosecutor is arguing for a court-martial for 4 U.S. soldiers accused of murdering Iraqi prisoners last May. The case is one of several in which American troops have been charged with murder, rape, and other abuses. In Washington, officials have imposed sanctions against 2 Russian firms for agreeing to provide missiles to Iran and update its air force. Similar sanctions have also been imposed on 5 companies in other countries, including India. Also in Washington, Congress has sent President Bush major pension legislation. The bill tightens the rules for corporations to ensure American workers receive the pensions they've been promised when they retire. On Capitol Hill, the Senate failed to pass a bill that would have raised the federal minimum wage. Democrats defeated the measure because of an attachment by Republicans that would have given large inheritance tax breaks to the wealthy. But the Senate did ratify an international treaty to fight cybercrime. Dozens of other countries, mostly in Europe, ratified the treaty yesterday. Participating countries would work more closely together, making it easier to catch criminals who conduct their business over the Internet. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Job growth was weaker last month, with the economy adding only 113,000 jobs. That's down from a revised gain of 124,000 in June. During the same period, the number of unemployed Americans rose to a 5-month high of nearly 5%. Mortgage rates are down for the 2nd week in a row to a nationwide average of 6.63%. That's the lowest since mid-June. Google has entered a deal with the Associated Press to allow the search engine to use the wire services material more broadly. The licensing agreement permits Google to use original AP content for future features and products. Shares of Apple Computer have so far dropped nearly 5% today. That comes after the company announced it would restate some of its financial results. Toyota reports a 39% jump in profit, or more than $3 billion, for its first fiscal quarter. The company says it expects another year of record earnings. U.S. Airways is cutting fares on its hourly shuttle between Boston and New York. The move could trigger a low-fare battle with JetBlue Airways. And Walmart says it will install banks at its Mexican stores once it receives approval. Walmart has more than 800 stores there. Light sweet crude settled at $74.76 today. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 2 points, NASDAQ down 7, S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm
On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's that saddest of days. That most grievous of days. The fifth day of the working week. It is Friday. And Fridays are tough. Fridays are tough because, well, you know, two days of poor Agnes and poor grandfather being subjected to my immoderate ravings before Monday rolls around again and we get a chance to share. So, I don't know. You want to hit some odds and ends this evening? There's a jillion stories in the Naked Planet, and we haven't covered them all yet, and they're all rattling around out there. I'll tell you off the top of my head, and the top of the show for that matter, that I had great responses from our conversation yesterday evening with Brian Moore down in Florida. A lot of people saying things like, yeah, I wish he was running here. I'd vote for that guy in a minute. There's a hunger in this nation for real political honesty. Because I suspect, hunger is a response to a lack of something. Hunger is a response to lack of food. Political hunger is a response to a lack of political substance. Here in West Virginia today, we have cause for political hunger. Because, well, we were very near, the working poor. Just say it, Bob. I'm disgusted with Robert Byrd again. Because you do know how the whole thing with the minimum wage poison pill bill shook out, don't you? It died. It will not. Paris Hilton and Anna Nicole Smith don't get their tax break. Their estate tax break for when they're old and decrepit and getting ready to shuffle off this mortal coil for. Wait a minute. Wait, I'm wrong. This isn't about what happens when Paris is old and wrinkly and stuff. This is what happens when Paris inherits the Hilton fortune. Paris didn't get her tax break. Poor Paris is going to have to shamble along on whatever little bit she's got to get by with. But of course, there were some senators. This was pointed out to me. I sort of waited for it. I found that, ultimately, you can get the roll call vote over at Senate.gov through Thomas, and the vote, procedurally speaking, they had a vote on cloture, a motion to close debate, shorthand for whether or not this thing could be filibustered. And the vote fell 3 votes shy. 3 votes shy of what would be needed to close debate. It was very close. It was 56 yeas, 56 people who wanted to close debate and just have an up or down vote on this Paris Hilton tax cut.
to 42 people who were willing to, continue debate. Not voting, two. I haven't sorted out who the two not voters were. Well, guess who was not voting? Joe Lieberman was not voting. You know he wanted to vote with his Republican buddies. Oh, he so badly wanted to, but he's busy getting his rear end handed to him by Ned Lamont right now, and seeing how he's down, 12, 13, 14 points in the latest Quinnipiac poll? Am I saying that right? I never know. Quinnipiac. You've got the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. No, so he's down 13, 14 points to Ned Lamont, and of course he's getting ready to run as an independent and, I'm only a Democrat as long as it's convenient for me to be one. Of course, you can also understand, yes, Lord, yes, you can understand why perhaps Max Baucus might not have been voting. Democrat, Montana, just lost his nephew in the meat grinder in Iraq. So that one I can understand. But it's the yay votes on cloture that have a flavor of heartbreak to them. Not heartbreak. Who am I kidding? You're not heartbroken. I'm not heartbroken. I expected it. Because, of course, three Democrats split from the party and ran off chasing after their Republican masters. But for me, it's an especially bitter pill. Yeah, it was Ben Nelson. Of course we expect Ben Nelson from Nebraska to do the wrong thing. Yeah, it was Ben Nelson. See, I can't tell these Republican light Republican wannabe Nelsons without a program, because it was Ben and Bill. It was the Nelson boys. The fake Democrats. You know, Bill Nelson, Florida. We talked a little bit about him last night. Joe Lieberman with a tan.
Did you get that tan?
You know, that guy, that guy's... never mind. I was going to get ugly. And, Bill Nelson said, yeah, let's vote on this. Let's close debate so that we can give Paris Hilton a tax cut. Yay! And Ben Nelson out in Nebraska. My God, if these guys... Quit! Just join the other party, will you? I don't have time to start a third party. But I do have time to build something where I know that there are people I can count on involved. Ben Nelson, Nebraska. Bill Nelson, Florida. Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, and of course, most notably, and, oh boy, hard to stomach, Robert C. Scared to Death Byrd, my senator. Couldn't even stand in solidarity with his own brother, Senator John D. Rockefeller IV of West Virginia. Because he's in a political campaign and he's afraid that John Racey, who owns just about every radio station in this state, would beat him over the head with it. So he voted in favor of closing debate so that Paris needs that tax break. It takes a lot of money to maintain her and her lifestyle, and if her daddy's estate has to pay taxes when he shuffles off this mortal coil, it's going to be tough on Paris. Oh, horse hockey. Yes, dear.
Bob, you don't want her to be not so hot anymore, do you?
There's only one woman
takes
on the
money.
On the, there's only
money
one woman on the
that.
Planet I worry about being hot, and she's sitting right next to me. And
ooh,
so
good answer.
Oh, little golf clap. Little golf clap
yeah.
For Bob.
That was perfect. Now,
well, you made me killer chicken wings for dinner this evening, dear.
That's because I love you. But don't worry about Paris. I mean,
I'm not worried about Paris. I'm worried about Bob Byrd.
Well, the estate tax, there are bigger fishes in the sea than Paris.
I mean, I do you
think of DeLay's widow.
He's not dead yet.
Oh, wrong one. I'm sorry.
Wishful thinking. Sorry.
Freudian slip.
But anyway, do you remember, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was during Fourth Estate Radio, when Bruce and John were chatting away, at least 3 weeks ago, I guess, there was a petition that was circulated during the program called No More Politics Without Purpose. And in which people, the signatories to the petition, said that they would no longer participate in politics without purpose. Well, this was an example of that. You see, I could sit here and just launch an entire jeremiad against Robert Byrd for this foolhardy, wrong-headed vote, but I am politically savvy enough to be able to explain to you why he voted the way he did. Because they tried to put a little bit of something for everybody in this bill, including something that means a lot to the state of West Virginia. And that is the Abandoned Mine Lands Reclamation Funding. You see, we've been raped by Big Coal for 100-plus years now. And Big Coal, without fail, leaves us to clean up its mess. And I think I said a couple of weeks ago that, you know, just because we don't have tumbleweeds here doesn't mean we don't have ghost towns. There are ghost towns all over West Virginia. There's one, 10, 15 miles from here called Thurmond. Once upon a time, more coal moved through Thurmond in a day than moved through Richmond, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh combined. It's a ghost town. Literally, there's ghosts. Ask the paranormalists. It's just swimming in them. But anyway, Big Coal comes along and rapes our state and does not clean up its mess and just takes its money and leaves. That's the philosophy behind Arch. That's behind the philosophy of Peabody, of Massey, of any of these sleazy SOB coal companies. So there is something out there called the Abandoned Mine Lands Reclamation Act. And it provides funding to clean up the filth that Big Coal has left behind in Appalachia, be it West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky. Anywhere Big Coal has left its filthy footprint, we try to take care of it and clean it up so that people don't have to live in that poison stew. You know, imagine the poisonous stew that covered New Orleans after Katrina. Now, expand that over the entire states of Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio. Anywhere there's a lump of coal, we've been Katrina'd. And that is not by any ways... to diminish what the level of negligence and horrific murderous intent evinced by the Bush administration in the Ninth Ward and the rest of New Orleans. But, of course, what I'm getting at is a restoration or a continuation of funding for abandoned mine lands was also included in this filthy bill. That would have traded a multi-million-dollar tax cut for Paris Hilton in exchange for a guy who works his ass off day in and day out getting a $2-an-hour raise, a $16-a-day raise, an $80-a-week raise. They threw all kinds of filth into this thing to try to hoodwink the Democratic Party. And Bill Frist has promised that none of these things will see the light of day on the Senate floor again unless he gets his billionaire tax break. Go ahead, West Virginia, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, Ohio. Virginia, Tennessee, live in the filthy stew of big coal. Live with it, because if I can't have my tax cut for Paris Hilton, you can't have clean water. I loathe them. I do. And Bob Byrd played right into their hands. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. DUBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Shake it, Agnes. 25 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. Love it when she gets some good bumper music going. Now, is there anything left to be said about the debate over whether or not Paris Hilton needs a tax cut? Why, yes, there is, because well, as long as there are insane right-wing Republicans, there will always be something to share. I'd like to share with you the words of Senator K. Bailey Hutchison of Texas. Her remarks upon seeing this bill go down, not for want of trying by Senators Byrd, Nelson, and Lincoln. Her words on the floor of the Senate. We are turning our back on the middle class and poor people. I'm sorry, you have to do that with the right accent. We are turning our back on the middle class and poor people in this country who depend on... Wait for it. Oh, wait for it. It's hanging out over the plate. Oh, Jesus, he never should have thrown that curveball. Poor people in this country who depend on the minimum wage and death tax relief. The poor, that, I, look, I can't make this stuff up. I couldn't pay a writer to do that. The poor people in this country who depend on the minimum wage and death tax relief. You know, you're just sitting there, you know, you're working minimum wage because you're just waiting for the old man to kick off. Because, you know, then you're going to be rich. Rich, I tell you, rich. Oh, my God. Wayne, help me out here.
Hey, I can. You know, first of all, this just goes to prove the point of what Nick Rahal said at the picnic Sunday. These are evil bastards.
Yeah, they are.
You know, and of course, he had to point out to all the knuckle draggers today in the paper that he wasn't referring to everyone that was a Republican that votes for him. I mean, you know, he does have some Republican friends.
Yeah.
Only the evil bastards in the Senate and the House.
Who are, let's say it again, Wayne, evil bastards.
Oh, yeah, they are evil. They are evil. You know, this K, what's her name?
K, I know.
K. Bailey, whatever the hell.
Yeah, K. Bailey.
Got to have more names than everybody else.
Well, it's because, yeah, I mean, that's because they got more money. K. Bailey Hutchison, Republican, Texas.
What's the Bailey? That's her... Is that her husband's name, or she wouldn't take his name?
I don't know. There's no hyphen there.
Yeah, you know. Nobody would marry
her. We're turning our back on the middle class and poor people in this country who depend on the minimum wage and death tax relief.
Oh, yeah, I really feel sorry for them ones that have to do without their death tax relief.
I mean, but, you know, there's so much... You know, I mean, it's the Internet, and I could use some language here because, frankly, it warrants it, Wayne, but... There is so much hooey involved in this. I mean, where the federal estate tax is concerned, the estate tax doesn't even kick in until like $1.5 million. Maybe even higher than that.
Okay, I thought it was $2 million. But even if it's $1.5 million, the first $1.5 million is tax-free.
Yeah.
Then it's everything after that.
Yeah.
No, no. But listen, I think that... In Robert Byrd's case, I've been looking at this all day, and I think the Democrats played this absolutely brilliantly. Now, you know, I know Kennedy was talking to Byrd. I know Rockefeller was talking to Byrd. You know, the difference between Rockefeller and Byrd is Rockefeller isn't up for election.
Well, that's true.
Okay?
I understand
now,
that.
And, you know, as much as we've messed up us Democrats, I believe there's a few of them that can still count.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they realize that they had enough, it doesn't matter how much this thing was defeated by. It only matters that it was defeated. And, you know, along with the abandoned mine reclamation was also orphan miners insurance.
Yeah.
You know, that they threw in. That we, you know, that the miners have been trying to get passed for how many years, and all of a sudden they're going to throw that in too. So, and, you know, the, I forget the gentleman's name, but some political hoo-bah from the United Mine Workers was urging the two senators to vote, you know, for the bill.
Yeah.
In other words, vote for closure. And so Byrd being up for re-election, you know, the United Mine Workers, there's a lot of retired United Mine Workers here and regular mine workers. So I think the whole thing was Byrd could come back and say, I voted for it.
Yeah, it was. It's strictly, I mean, I understand that. It's strictly a matter of political cover.
No. And listen, here, do you realize what else they did?
What else?
They also made Senator Frisk vote for it before he voted against it.
Yes, he did.
Now, you know.
And well, I mean, he voted against cloture so that he could then have the power to bring the bill back to the floor.
Right, but first he voted for cloture.
Right.
Isn't that something they keep accusing John Kerry of?
Yeah, well,
voted
yeah.
Voted for it before I voted against it?
Yeah, yeah, it was for it
yeah.
before it, sure.
Right.
Absolutely. Of course, you know, Frist is not right. Frist would be up for re-election, but he didn't have the stomach for hitting the hustings again.
No, he did. Well, you know, he probably had some cats to dissect or something.
Yeah, it's
bastard. He's got more important things to do.
Yeah.
But I think the thing played out pretty well. I really do.
Well, you know, and yeah, if they can count, and if they knew that Lincoln Chafee and George Voinovich were going to vote against cloture.
Well, you got to think they knew that, don't you?
Sure.
You know, I mean, you know.
I mean, part of this whole, you know, minority leader, majority leader gig is knowing whose votes are, is being able to count every vote before you allow the vote to take place.
Well, that's exactly right, you know.
But, you know, as far as these others, though, Blanche Lincoln, Arkansas, Bill Nelson of Florida, I mean, you know, how prescient that we had the conversation with Brian Moore last night.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, I have, you know, Bill Nelson. Well, Bill Nelson's not a Democrat, and, you know, your guest pointed that out. I mean, you know, I know he's got a D after his name. But.
Well, but, you know, you can have a tattoo of mother on your arm and still be a killer.
Yes, you can. And I believe a lot of them have. But,
you know, I wish, honest to God, Wayne, I wish the good people of Nebraska would do something about Ben Nelson. And I wish the people of Florida would do something about Bill.
Well, I'll tell you another one. Well, but he is a Republican, too. As you know, Domenici, man, he was there right away. How important it is to, and that his name?
Yeah, Pete Domenici?
Yeah. How important it is to pass this for the poor people that work for minimum wage. Like
they care.
Huh?
Like they care.
How long have the Democrats been trying to get minimum wage passed?
Oh, I know, and you know you can tell that this. Let me throw a monkey wrench into the whole works for just a minute. Yeah, let's just speculate shamelessly here for a second, Wayne. Let's assume
like shameless speculation.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, if they wanted to throw something in there, you know, because and I thought about this when you mentioned how the United Mine Workers and the retired United Mine Workers were trying to get you know Rockefeller and Byrd to you know vote. Vote for cloture in this. Byrd did. Rockefeller didn't. If they'd been really serious about this, what would have happened, Wayne? What would have happened if they had put the Employees' Free Choice Act into this?
Oh, good move, Bob. See? You know, then...
But that tells you how unserious they were.
That's exactly right.
Because if you'd put the Employees Free Choice Act into this, you would have had every Democratic senator's phone being lit up by every single member of every single union in this country.
Well, I have to tell you, I would have been one of them.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know, now.
But do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I do see where you're going.
They didn't, you know, this they wanted this this tax cut, but they didn't want it bad enough to really trade anything that mattered to them because poor working people do not matter to the Republican Party.
And you know, here's another thing you got to realize too, that you know, if these people were successful and passed this, they also have the ability to undo anything that they did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have, it's the same, today I had, I don't know, I'll bet 250 construction workers laid off of the Marmette locks project.
Oh, jeez.
Why? Because the Corps of Engineers is out of money.
Right.
We hope we get some more, in October.
Right, because what, the federal fiscal ends in September?
Yeah, something, I don't know. Or when the Corps gets their money or something, you know, who knows, you know, with all their goofy rules. But this happened last year also during the project, and the contractor went to the federal government and said, look, we'll front the money. Until it went to the Corps, and, you know, we'll front the money and pay the men and pay for materials. And when you get your money again, when you get your appropriation again, you pay us back with a small interest. And the Corps said, great. And the job went on. Well, guess what the Republicans did this time?
They stiffed them.
You can't get interest. We can't pay you back interest. So, you know, the company's going to put up their money for nothing?
No.
No, and I don't blame them.
You know, and I don't either. I mean, I'm not one of these, you know, the workers' paradise, you know, raving communists, Wayne. You know, I believe that companies have to be allowed to try to make money.
And listen, and so do construction workers and union people. I mean, that's another myth, you know, that the right has fostered.
Yeah.
I guess is a proper word.
Lied, fostered. That's lied. Another word.
Yeah.
For, yeah, lied.
I like lie better.
Yeah. It's a little more emboldened.
Right. But I think that, I think this thing worked out well. And like I say, Senator Byrd could come back and say, you know, I voted for it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many of these people understand what's going on.
Well, he took a lot of gunpowder away from John Racey.
Yes, he did.
And John Racey,
exactly right.
John Racey's crazier than a cockroach on a three-day decon binge.
Old John with his finger on the trigger, Racey.
Yeah. Woo!
Did you see that today?
Hell yeah.
The big hope, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I hope they didn't put any bullets in that thing.
Yeah, that, I mean, you know, crazy with a capital K.
Yes.
But you know, so that's gone. He doesn't have that. I've already received push polling here. Oddly enough, on one of the head-on radio network phone lines, paid, you know, that's obviously paid for by John Racey.
Oh, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all. But I think that, you know, all in all, I think that things went very well in the middle of the night or whenever they did this last night.
That is how they operate, isn't
it? You
know,
and we'll just have to, you know, the whole secret is, you know, that when they come back, Frisk is going to try this again.
Sure.
And they're going to sweeten the pot.
Well, you know, the day that they put the Employees Free Choice Act in, I'll get, you know, sure, give Paris her tax break, because then suddenly, under Employees Free Choice, and you know this better than I do, Wayne, under that bill, suddenly you don't necessarily need a minimum wage anymore.
No, you don't.
Because then anybody who wants to join a union can, with a simple majority of the people inside the business.
Right. And it is a simple majority.
Yeah.
It's 51%, you know.
Well, I mean, it's 50.01% when it comes right down to it.
Well, exactly, you know, but it's hard to own them employees.
Depends on how many there are.
Well, you can, but it gets rather messy. And then somebody will get upset.
Somebody going to prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, seriously, you know, it's that old labor standard that if we, you know, if everybody in America belongs to a union, we don't need a minimum wage.
No, you don't. That's exactly right.
And maybe, you know, as we sit here and we wait for Democrats to grow a spine and really get out there and build the fire up to a white heat, and we ask them for things like universal health care, and we ask them for things like not necessarily a minimum wage but a living wage, maybe what we find out, maybe, Wayne, once again, this is all going to be, it's all going to fall on labor's shoulders. Do you know what I mean by that? Maybe we don't get universal health care. Maybe we don't get a living wage. Maybe instead what we do is unionize the country. And then people have health care
exactly,
and pensions and benefits.
You know, because, and hopefully Barack Obama is going to address this at the JJ dinner, too, because, you know, it is a perplexing thing with the universal health care, because you have millions of people that have very good health care already, you know, And I mean, a lot of people are pressing for the single payer thing and all that. Well, you know, some people would be losing on that also, you know. And so maybe the secret is just everybody belong to a union. Unions have very good health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, and, but that's a real interesting twist. I think that's what, and that's what the Democrats should do. We're going to have to push that. When they come back, say, throw in the Employees' Free Choice Act.
Yeah, and watch the blood drain out of the entire Republican Party's face.
Yeah. That's
that old Serbian word. You know, you go out and you embolden working people.
Does everyone know what that means?
I think so. Yeah, it's Serbian for balls.
Yeah, yeah. To give balls.
Yeah. But no, embolden working people, and a lot of things solve themselves, Wayne.
Well, you know, I think I'm very encouraged here lately. I mean, it seems as though the Democrats have finally realized, after many, many months, that the majority of the people in this country are against this war. You know, I mean, they're coming out with resolutions. We want the troops home by the end of the year. Hillary did a little dance with Ronnie yesterday. What did he say? Oh, my God. What did he say? My goodness, yeah.
my stars.
Yeah. How old is he?
Well, she came out and called for his resignation today.
Yes, she did. Very good. He needs to resign.
Good on you, Hillary.
Right.
I don't want her to be... But, and I read something yesterday that was kind of weird. I don't mean to take this too far afield, Wayne. But I read some speculation that Harry Reid might ask her to give up her presidential aspirations or ambitions or whatever in order to become to succeed him as minority leader and then ostensibly as majority leader when we take back the Senate.
Well, listen, I don't know if I mentioned that on the radio. I think that would be an excellent plan, and they ought to all get together and, you know, I mean, Hillary, I'm sorry, you know, Hillary is the Republicans' candidate. Just, you know, keep hanging in there and hanging in there. Let them get their whole gang, you know, game plan together, spend all kinds of money printing up stuff, making commercials, and blah, blah, blah. And at the last minute, Hillary stands up and said, I decided I'm not going to run.
Yeah.
I'm not going to seek the nomination.
You know, I think Flush Flimball would probably go out and hang himself at that point.
That wouldn't upset me.
No.
So, you know, I don't know. There's
cause for encouragement.
There is things for encouragement. These last couple of days, I have been very encouraging.
Frank Lautenberg, senator from New Jersey, has, you know, he went out and he campaigned for Joe Lieberman, but then he came back and said, look, you know, I think if Joe gets his ass handed to him handily, he will not run as an independent in November.
Well, I certainly hope not. And, you know, the thing I read today, he's 13 points behind.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's 13 points behind with 4 days. Well, I mean, you know, we're coming up on the end of today on the East Coast with 3 days left to go.
Yeah, the vote is Tuesday. Is it not?
Yeah. And, you know, I bear no ill will to Joe Lieberman. I mean, I was out there. I actively campaigned for him when he ran as... when he put a stake through the heart of Al Gore's presidential ambitions, I campaigned for him. I talked to the rednecks, and I said, you know, look, it's okay. It's okay. Joe's all right.
As did I, you know. But, then again, things have changed. And I have no ill will against him either. I hope he has a very nice retirement.
But this ought to be a lesson about literally kissing up to opposition party presidents.
Well, and I'm telling you, like I described, this is a shot across the bow to all these so-called moderate Democrats or centralists or whatever they want to describe.
It's a shot across the bow to the damn DLC is what it is.
Oh, yes, it is. And they, you know, they need one to let, yeah.
I don't know if you saw Paul Krugman's column, his most recent one. Centrism is for suckers.
Yes, it is.
There is no center They don't exist.
Well, and I read something else today. I don't know if it was in the Post or the Times or what, that the end of the right. Did you see that one?
Yeah. Well, they've got no ideas. They've been purely responsive. It's been nothing but a series of counterpunches against bête noirs and made up demons and, you know, evil liberals, you know, out there.
Well, in fact, they are the evil ones. I mean, look, every time that they are pressured into doing something for the people because the people finally have had enough and says, we need this, and that has happened with the minimum wage. That also happened with prescription drugs for seniors. So what do? They pass a bill that the Medicare or Medicaid cannot negotiate bulk drug prices with the pharmaceutical company.
Sure.
So there again, they reward. You know, it's very similar to ending the estate tax or state tax. The, you know, okay, we'll give it to you, but we're going to make ourselves and our friends a hell of a lot more richer. Then they come up with this idiot donut hole thing.
Jiminy, that thing just blows my mind.
It's unbelievable. How many people will die in the donut hole because they can't afford their drugs anymore? And just because you can't afford your drugs anymore doesn't mean that you can skip your, monthly payment.
Oh, no, no. You're still paying. No.
You got to keep paying that. You just don't get any drugs. They're evil.
They're evil. Nick Rahal's right.
Yes, he is right.
And I know there's a lot of people with issues with Nick, and you know, he and I don't always see eye to eye on things, but that, you know, there is some elements of politics where in the Democratic Party, we've got to realize that we can't all be single issue voters.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I think there's another one. I think Nick is starting to realize some of the errors of his ways here lately. And I certainly hope so. He's a fine gentleman.
Yeah, he is.
You know, he's a fine gentleman. And I honestly and truly think he cares. You know, he's just a little confused on some issues. You can't stay over in that, I don't know what you want to call it.
Well, I mean,
for
look,
18 or 20 years and remains totally sane.
No, you can't. You know, and look, I mean, I know where we are, Wayne. This is West Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean no insult. This ain't Massachusetts.
No, it ain't.
So I expect that a congressman, a Democratic congressman from West Virginia, from time to time, is going to have to do something like back a flag pledging bill.
That's exactly
you know, it's just silly, but it's the kind of politics that plays up the holler at the Third Pentecostal Apostolic Church of Holiness.
Well, that's exactly right. And listen, all these United Mine Workers and retired, you know, not just union workers, but, you know, mine workers, and that they don't, the majority of them can't comprehend what this estate tax would mean. That how many billions of dollars that it would remove from our treasury, and then that gives the Republicans the excuse to cut every social program there is.
Because
we don't have the money anymore.
This is ultimately about,
no.
I mean, I hate to beat on it like a broken record or something, Wayne, but this all really does come back to Grover Norquist.
That's exactly
this right. Is about weakening the federal government to the point that you can drown it in a bathtub.
Right.
Those are his words, not mine. I hate that man. I mean, I would not break bread with him. I wouldn't cross the street to shake his hand. I wouldn't shake his hand if he was standing in front of me. That is an anti-American person, as far as I'm concerned. He is an enemy of everything that I was raised to believe is good and true and decent about this country.
Yes, I agree.
And so, consequently, you know, I mean, and I don't think you're talking down to the to retired miners or anything, because they're, you know, they're as sharp as anybody out there, anybody who can stay alive in that hole for 30 years.
I'm not talking down to them.
Yeah, I know, but yeah.
You know, it's
they see a brother out there that hadn't got prescription coverage.
You know, and I mean, a part of this is people, working people, don't have time to stay informed. They're working all the time. You know, when you're working 12 hours a day and you have to get up 3 hours early because it takes you 2 hours to get to your job and you work for 12 hours and then it takes you 2 hours to get home, you have something to eat and you go to bed. You don't figure out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
And
I absolutely do. I mean, look, I know what gas is going for at the pump. We make plans 2 days in advance for every time we have to drive an automobile now.
Exactly. Wow, did you see that electric car on Bart Cop?
Yeah, I did.
God.
You kind of want one, don't you?
I really want one. I don't know where I'd get $80,000. But that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, and... did I read that right? 0 to 60 in 4 seconds?
Yeah, you read that right.
That's pretty quick, ain't it?
Yeah. That's going to keep pace with your average Porsche, Corvette, you know.
Yep, and no tailpipe.
No.
Amazing.
No, well, you know, when you get right... I guess maybe the one downside of that thing, and maybe you could get a subwoofer and sort of do it from an audio perspective, is you don't have that... Yeah, you don't have that. It
well,
just,
they, you know,
and it's
we
gone.
Make CDs of it.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, you just put that in the stereo in case you want to impress somebody. You
yeah,
know.
I guess it would be kind of weird at first, huh?
Well, I mean, can you imagine sitting there at the stoplight and you got your CD player in and you got nothing but those sound effects, that burbling muffler, and you step on the gas and the car doesn't make any noise, but, you know, you got the loudspeaker in your car and it makes the sound of squealing tires.
Yeah. We can do that if that'll make you happy. Yeah.
Sure.
Me, I wouldn't mind gliding.
Right. Well, it was like when I test drove that Toyota Highlander hybrid. It was when I was still down in Alabama, and I took my dad out just to go for a ride in it because, you know, we need to get out and do a little. And I brought the thing over and got him in, made sure the windows were rolled down, and said, "We're leaving now." Put the thing in drive and stepped on the pedal, and it didn't make any noise. It just went.
It just goes.
Yeah, it just went. It was the coolest thing. Dad was laughing his head off. Oh, this is funny.
Oh, I bet it is, man. I bet it is. So, well, buddy, listen, I guess I've taken up more of your time.
No, that's okay. It's Friday, man. This is what it's for. We're working on sound effects for the sound of a swinging screen door and a creaking porch swing. I think this is what Fridays should be in August.
Yeah, and it looks like the heat's going to go away a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering that in February, I'll be behind this microphone bitching about how cold it is.
Oh yeah, but you got to have something to bitch about.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
That's what life's all about.
Griping all the way to the grave.
There you go, brother.
All right, take care, Wayne.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, let's see. A little less than 7 minutes before the hour. I got a couple of stories here I want to get into, but I want to give them the time that they deserve. I want to back up, but beyond that, I want to back up for a minute. Remember all the rummy stuff from last night? And that line that he had about how, you know, I've never been optimistic about all this. Now, I don't think anyone can say that I've been excessively optimistic. Quote, Rumsfeld. You know, I love it when they do this because it's almost like shooting fish in a barrel. Quote, the Iraqi army knows what kind of a regime Saddam Hussein is running. They know what the damage that's done to the people of Iraq. They know the truth that the United States of America doesn't covet the land of any other country. I think that there would be, in fact, there was one instance where hundreds and hundreds of Iraqi soldiers surrendered to a journalist who didn't even have a gun. So the idea that it's going to be a long, long, long battle of some kind, I think it is belied by what happened in 1990. That was November 14th, 2002, in an interview with CBS's Steve Croft. What did he say yesterday? The idea that it's going to be a long, long battle is belied. Yeah. No, this is going to be the global war against violent, global struggle against violent extremism. Bless his pointy little head. He's still trying to get that new name for the war out there. It's the G-Save. The global struggle against violent extremism is going to be a matter of years. I mean, the Cold War lasted 40 years. Some years, 3 years and 2 years. Is it going to be a long war? Gosh, yes, you bet. Golly, gee whiz. Well, That kind of puts pay to that. And then there's Rumsfeld's appearance on This Week with George Snuffleupagus on January 19th, 2003, when he was asked about the cost of the war in Iraq. And he said,
gee whiz, the Office of Management and Budget estimated it would be something under $50 billion. Outside estimates say up to $300 billion.
That's what Stephanopoulos said in reply. Outside estimates say up to $300 billion. And Rumsfeld replies,
baloney.
It goes on. Rumsfeld and Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz just heaped criticism on Army Chief of Staff Eric Shinseki. I think I called him John Shinseki last night. Too much gin on the cornflakes. But just heaped scorn on him after Shinseki told Congress in February 2003 that the occupation could require several hundred thousand troops. And Wolfowitz said that's wildly off the mark. And then this one. This one really is the best.
Think of the face.
This is with Media Roundtable on September 13th, 2002.
And remember, yesterday, what was it? I never said this wasn't going to be a long, hard struggle. The global struggle against violent extremism. Golly gee, gee willikers, whoopsie daisy, mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, kiddly divey too, by George. Think of the faces in Afghanistan when the people were liberated, when they moved out in the streets and they started singing and flying kites and women went to school and people were able to function and other countries were able to start interacting with them. That's what would happen in Iraq. That's what would happen in Iraq.
You know, we take driver's licenses away from it, you know, even Mel Gibson, for getting loaded and trying to operate heavy machinery. Perfectly legal to get loaded, perfectly legal to operate heavy machinery, including automobiles. Not legal to do the two together. We'll destroy a human being, a family's livelihood, because a guy makes a mistake and has one beer too many at the tavern on the way home on a Friday evening. We will. We will utterly destroy his family over that. On the other hand, you take Donald Rumsfeld, who is just clinically insane. And he's ruined nigh unto 30,000 families' lives with his craziness. And there is not one single, there's not one single Republican out there with the guts to call Karl Rove on the continued employment of Donald Rumsfeld. That's the problem with the Republican Congress. It's all phony guts. It's all phony. It's all false bravado and fake patriotism. There's not any real patriotism, any real guts, any political courage in that entire stinking, morally bankrupt, ethically dead political party. Because if there was, Donald Rumsfeld would no longer have a job. Right? Yeah. So that's an hour. Look, come on up to the front porch. Sit down, pour yourself a glass of lemonade.
Or whatever.
There's a ball, there's a mason jar with a peach floating in the bottom of it under the rocker there. Granny keeps it there for her rheumatiz. Avail yourself of it. This is the Head On Radio Network. Me, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh.
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rap.
It's rap.
I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling because I'm so full of bull, so full of crap. With condescending thrives, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
His guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic, cuts.
I'm not sleaze and not sleaze.
That's right.
I really am.
Because
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class.
I'm a fat conservative
butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead. Hey, the face of a
This is the Quality News Network. Fighting continues between Israel and Hezbollah, with rockets and airstrikes flying in both countries. Israeli strikes destroyed the last major roads linking Lebanon to Syria, hampering efforts by the UN to deliver relief supplies. At least 40 Lebanese were killed today, including at least 33 farm workers near the Syrian border. Hezbollah also fired about 100 rockets into northern Israel, killing at least two civilians. One missile hit Hadera, its deepest strike since the fighting began. The city is about 30 miles from Tel Aviv, where authorities are reportedly preparing bomb shelters. Tens of thousands of Shias demonstrated today in support of Hezbollah. Demonstrators threw a firebomb at the British embassy in Tehran, but no casualties were reported. Smaller demonstrations took place in countries including Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Syria. In Iraq, two more U.S. Marines were killed today in Anbar province. Dozens of others died in other violence today elsewhere in the country. 3,500 U.S. troops are being redeployed from Mosul to Baghdad to help with security. In southern Afghanistan today, coalition troops killed 25 Taliban insurgents. A NATO convoy was targeted by a suicide bomber, but no casualties were reported. In Cuba, the health minister says President Fidel Castro will return to office soon. They say his brother Raul is running the country until then, but neither has been seen in public. In Washington, officials have imposed sanctions against two Russian firms. The companies recently agreed to provide missiles to Iran and update its air force. Similar sanctions have also been imposed on five companies in other countries, including India. On Capitol Hill, the Senate failed to pass a bill that would have raised the federal minimum wage. Democrats defeated the measure because of an attachment by Republicans that would have given large inheritance tax breaks to the wealthy. A cool front moved across New York today, bringing temperatures down to the high 80s. Other cities, including Washington and Philadelphia, are expected to begin cooling down tomorrow. And in China, authorities have again ordered the mass slaughter of hundreds of thousands of dogs to curb a rabies outbreak. Animal rights groups are outraged and calling for a boycott of Chinese goods. Last week, authorities in one province clubbed, electrocuted, and hanged more than 50,000 dogs. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Growth was weak last month, with the economy adding only 113,000 jobs. That's down from a revised gain of 124,000 in June. During the same period, the number of unemployed Americans rose to a five-month high of nearly 5%. Mortgage rates are down for the second week in a row to a nationwide average of 6.63%. That's the lowest since mid-June. Texas-based American Amicable Life Insurance will pay $70 million to the SEC. That's to settle charges that it sold a deceptive sales program to 50,000 American military personnel over the past 6 years. Shares of Apple Computer dropped today after the company announced it would restate some of its financial results. Apple says mishandled stock options may mean financial statements over the last 4 years are incorrect. Toyota reports a 39% jump in profit, or more than $3 billion, for its first fiscal quarter. Its market value is now triple the combined worth of the big three automakers. U.S. Airways is cutting fares on its hourly shuttle between Boston and New York. The move could trigger a low-fare battle with JetBlue Airways. Light sweet crude settled at $74.76 today. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 2 points at 11,240. NASDAQ down 7, S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Coming up on 6 minutes after the hour, our Friday evening escapade. You know, we use images here that are based on our own personal experience here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West Virginia. And this show really does have, especially on Fridays, but most any evening, but especially on Fridays, an aspect of the front porch. Just hanging out as the day goes down, kicking back, relaxing. Although, the stuff in that mason jar with the peach floating at the bottom, it packs a kick. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Andy is with us from Wales. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Going good, man.
How'd you like that rap, then?
Oh, isn't that great? Odd. I'm a Nazi.
Oh, it's just so well done, isn't it?
Well, who's the genius who did that?
Well, actually, it's that guy Harrison on the Edge.
Oh, is that his work?
Yeah, that replaced Mike Malloy. He spent 3 months recording the Rush Limbaugh show and taking the bits that are in the right key out and morphing a few words to get them the right
because
key.
Because that takes profound patience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm looking, I've got the lyrics up here, and that's what, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. 15 verses, so it's not the whole MP3. It's a lot longer than that, is what he had done originally. Each one, yeah, all of it comes from Rush Limbaugh's show. It's all his words.
Yeah, I mean, that's nobody mimicking Rush.
No, that must have taken, I mean, probably weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you come out of that process with anything approaching your sanity.
Well, he's already insane.
That helps.
Because what is it? His website says he's the recovering son of a recovering homosexual son of a right wing Republican fascist or something. So he's already had all that from one side when he was growing up.
Right.
Yeah, I think he's just driven him nuts and he's never get his home back now.
That's beautiful stuff. I appreciate it. That was awfully good of you to send that to us.
No, that's okay. It had to be done. It's been about for a while, but I kept forgetting.
Well, I think I've heard it on Malloy from time to time.
I think Malloy's played it. I'm pretty sure Randy Rose played it once or twice as well on her show, and Stephanie Miller plays it all the time. I always kept forgetting to tell you guys to get it, and so, yeah, managed to achieve that today. That was quite good.
Well, you know, I appreciate all the help we get from listeners, from finding stories to finding bits like that, because, you know, it's almost like having a staff.
Well, no, you have a staff, and you know, Agnes, me, and a couple of other, like Pete and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just volunteer staff.
We're just open sourcing an entire radio network, and I think that's really cool.
Well, yeah, well, it's what the internet's all about, isn't it? But should we move on to some news?
Well, yeah, and, well, you mentioned that's what the internet's all about. I don't know if you saw...
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of which, and I don't know what to make of this because there's not enough detail, Bush is calling, and I mean, this is the kind of stuff that sends cold shivers down my spine because I know what's out there on the internet, and I know, you know, I'm beginning to grasp the power of the internet, Andy.
Yeah.
Bush calls for regulation of netcasting.
Oh, dear.
That would be me, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, but... There's going to be a problem with this. It's not going to go through because American corporations are stupid and greedy, but they're not.
But it's American corporations pushing for this.
Yeah, but the American corporations that actually want it are not the ones that are currently doing really well. On the web, it's the ones who have the vested interest in keeping things as it is. plenty of other people. I mean, for example, if this happens, then Europe's just going to set up the European internet, and it's going to be regulated carefully and basically free to all, and then there's going to be America's internet. And, you know, Europe will just get all the web traffic, and we'll start winning. So that's not going to last long anyway.
Well, see, I mean, that's what the creepy part of this, because this is a submission. I mean, have you seen any of this, Andy?
Well, I've been looking about. I mentioned it was mentioned on the BBC, but there wasn't really much on it, and I couldn't
find. Well, and that's what scares me. It's so vacuous that the next thing I'm sure that the next thing I'm going to hear out of the Bush administration, every time something really lousy, stinking, and awful happens, it turns out that the Bush administration thinks that something needs clarification, and this is actually a submission to the World Intellectual Property Organization, the WIPO.
Yeah.
But it's being driven, oddly enough, not. It's being driven by Rupert Murdoch's Fox News and Rupert Murdoch's MySpace, as well as Yahoo and AT&T.
Well, that's what I mean. It's the people who have a vested interest in keeping things the way they are and not letting people actually start to use the web properly that are pushing for it. I mean, Murdoch, we know Murdoch will push for anything which maintains the status quo, because the status quo generates a lot of, nonsense news copy for him to farm out about missing people in Aruba or wherever the hell it is this time. He has no wish for people to see the truth, and that's why he wants the sort of netcasting, blogs, all of that restricted.
Well, I remember the major news networks. I mean, I don't know how much play it got on the Beeb or anything, but over here the major news networks never even knew, you would think, about the back rub, the neck rub, and Angela Merkel.
It played nonstop, wall to wall in Europe, on every news channel except Sky.
But see, we never would have in the U.S. We never would have known about it, Andy, had it not been for YouTube.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know.
And I think this is I know how these creeps think.
Yeah, well, they think, oh no, there's bad news coming out. We've got to crush it.
Yeah.
They're getting the news through that way. We've got to stop that. Oh, they're getting the news that way. We've got to stop it. They're just typical.
I mean, it's the same attitude that had the Chinese autocrats pull the plug on Dan Rather during his coverage of the Tiananmen Square massacre.
Yeah.
Just and it was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the same. It doesn't matter. You can wear your little Mao suit, or you can wear a $5,000 hand tailored Savile Row suit. It doesn't matter. Clothes don't make the man.
No.
Fascism makes the autocrat.
Well, that's it. I mean, the Chinese government has always been a fascist government, and the American government has, pretty much always been a fascist government. Now, you've had periods where some crazies managed to get in, and the last time that happened, they shot him.
Yeah.
So, like Roosevelt and so forth, do you think they'd get elected now? Of course they wouldn't.
Oh, no. Karl Rove would,
respect them to death.
Oh, yeah. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine what the Republican Party would do, Andy, to a guy running for president from a wheelchair? We don't even have to guess, because we know what
the steps of the Capitol building.
Yeah, we know what they did to a guy running for Senate from a wheelchair.
Missing two legs and an arm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Max Cleland. And they sleazed him. They ran TV commercials that morphed his face into that of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, yeah. But none of that surprises me. But to be honest with you, I'm not sure that that's going to really cut it anymore, to be honest with you. All the polls that have done of the American people are basically, no, not so much.
See, that's what happens. I'm a little bit more pessimistic, I guess, than you, at least this time through. Oddly enough, it seems like we've switched positions a little bit. You can do polling of the American people from dawn to dusk for the next 10 years, and every single piece of polling data will tell you that the American electorate despises negative advertising.
Mm-hmm.
But every time it's done, and then they focus group it, the negative ad is the one that gets their attention.
Well, I'd say that the reason that is, that the negative ads seem to work, is because the media at the moment love them. Your news, when the Swift voting came out, it was like they had a whole story just handed to them, wasn't it? It was like, oh, great, we can talk about these people who are having a go at these, politicians. Now, the media don't give a damn whether it's Democrats or Republicans, really, when in that sort of situation, because if it had been the Democrats in charge and doing that to the Republicans, it would have happened exactly the same way. It's because your media is a corporate media, and that sort of handed-to story that keeps everybody looking at something that's irrelevant. You don't, you know, as long as you're not looking at the real issues, the corporate media are happy, because if you look at the real issues, well, real things have to be done to address them, and that means that, well, the economy doesn't grow the way the corporate media want. Because the corporate media, at the end of the day, corporate is the important part of it.
Well, I mean, there's really no assailing that position.
Mm.
It's
sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, look at this. This is like the best part of a million years of development, and this is the best we've come up with, a bunch of fat cats stealing us blind at every opportunity and committing mass murder and genocide across the world.
Yeah, it goes back to... It goes back to that business that I mentioned in the interview with Al Stewart. It's 2001. It's Stanley Kubrick. It's the chimpanzee standing with the bloody bone next to the monolith.
Yeah.
Same guy.
Okay.
Same guy. Better clothing. You know, somewhat better food.
Yeah.
But you know, the intentions remain the same.
Well, that's true. I mean, biologically, when they're not really different to any of the people that lived then. I mean, you know, if you went back in time 12,000 years to the end of the last ice age and dragged somebody from Northern Europe into the future, gave them a bit of a shave and taught them to speak the language and gave them a bit of acclimatization with, like, learning how to use things, then they'd be functioning perfectly normally in society. There's no real difference. So part of that obviously means that we haven't got over all our primal problems.
And that's the real debate, isn't it, Andy? I mean, is there a higher place for humanity to go, or are we just bloodthirsty chimps with better houses?
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. Well, the problem is both of those points are kind of right and kind of wrong. I mean, essentially, we are a bunch of bloodthirsty chimps who happen to have brains as our specialization instead of anything else. So we've been particularly good at spreading the blood around, like. But there is a higher purpose, I think, to just life generally, and that is intelligent life, and we're not supposed to screw it up the way we are. Now, I think part of our problem is that we allow psychopaths to rule us so much. I mean, we, you know, as a species, we kind of let the psychopathically tendency people go to the front rather than challenging them and driving them out.
Could that be, Andy, because the psychopaths are the ones who are constantly feel driven to run other people's lives?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, we're already well aware that anybody who can get themselves elected under no circumstances should be allowed to do so. You know, that's a well-known political axiom. But we haven't done anything about it yet. I mean, you know, my idea of an ideal society is where if somebody says they want to be in charge of society because they simply reckon they can do it better themselves, then that person needs to be, like, talked to and, if necessary, locked up. And everybody who actually does the jobs in society are pulled out of a hat, essentially. You know, what did you get a degree in? Oh, yeah, you'd be perfect for this job. 5 years, in you go. And you have to serve your term. There's no getting out of it. And there's no way to steal or embezzle because we freeze all the person's assets. It'd be very easy to have a non-corruptible and functional government.
And make it, well, you know, I mean, that's the same way I've advocated in the past, that if we really want to clean up government corruption, you know, if the death penalty is good enough for some guy who kills over a $25 hunk of crack, that it should certainly be applicable to a congressman who steals $10 million.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, look at the relative sort of degrees of damage the person does, even if you just wanted to do it on a strictly kind of how much damage does $10 million do and how much damage does one murder do, then, yeah, you know, $10 million does a lot of damage, especially where that could have gone to saving little children's lives or, you know,
or funding a suicide hotline or neonatal hearing screenings.
Yeah, or any of those genetic testings that need to be done.
You know, how much do you suppose the express shipping was on all that fuel, all those bombs and all that fuel that we FedExed to Israel?
Oh, you didn't FedEx it. You slapped it on a bunch of.
Well, I'm speaking figuratively.
Well, it didn't cost you a huge amount, actually, but yeah, it shouldn't have been, the money shouldn't have been paid for. Because, I mean, you know, you fueled up at British airports for free and used our airspace for free as well. So
right, and broke your law while we were at it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but, you know, the U.S. breaking our laws happens all the time.
I mean, the flights stopped in Scotland, correct?
Yeah, well, basically, if they'd landed in England, there were people threatening to break into the bases, like people in Britain, just going, oh, we're not having it. And they were, like, protesting, and they actually thought they were going to get perimeter breaches. So they transferred the flights to Scotland, but it was all illegal. They weren't allowed to land there anywhere in the U.K.
Anybody going to pay for that?
No.
Just checking.
Of course not, Bob. What do you think this is? A democracy? with a countable.
I've been into the mason jar with the peach in the bottom of it. Forgive me, Andy.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I know. You know, when you've absolutely positively got to bomb children overnight. Jesus.
Well, yeah, yeah. Basically, and I mean, you know, the irony of the whole situation is that what was it? GW wanted. They wanted Hezbollah to be split from the Lebanese people and all that sort of nonsense.
And they've driven them into each other's arms.
Well, yeah, do you know what? The Christians, who were the only group that really opposed Hezbollah in Lebanon anyway, now support Hezbollah. By the way, just to show that the support is not just a small minority, the bishop of Beirut says that all good Catholic Christians have to stand with Hezbollah against Israel.
And see, that's a natural occurrence. I mean, I'm not a multimillionaire think tanker.
No.
But I've played, you know, again, I come back to it. I've played a few games of Risk in my day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Right up until the
And now that's not to say that when this is all over with and I think Hezbollah's not going to go away because Hezbollah. You know, it's not like they've got an international Hezbollah headquarters. They're not going to go away. So, you know, when this is all over, you know, Hezbollah, I mean, let's be honest here. Hezbollah will probably take their little scimitars or whatever it is they've got or their AK-47s, and they will put the Bishop of Beirut on his knees, and they will say, renounce Christ, embrace our crazy version of Islam, or die.
Oh, yeah, well, they probably wouldn't even give him that choice. They'd probably just kill him because he's a kafir. But, yeah, I mean, you know, as soon as Israel stopped fighting and there's no real threat from Israel invading again, then the Christians and the Muslims in Lebanon will turn on each other again. And, you know, I mean, the army's mostly Christian with a minority of Muslims and Hezbollah's Muslim. So, I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, they're about equally well-armed and they're both just as motivated. So guess what? Another 15 years of a bloody civil war.
Jesus.
Yeah, which we'll get involved with, supplying the Christians with weapons again, so we make sure that there's no...
Hey, you got to remember what Calvin Coolidge said, Andy.
Yeah.
The business of America is business.
Yeah.
And then you move straight to that great line from The Godfather where Abe Vigoda says, you know, tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. That's all it is. It's only business. You know, babies die in the rubble. It's only business.
Well, that's the problem with these.
It's good for the CEO of General Electric when little babies die in the rubble.
Of course it is. It's good for America when babies die in the rubble. Your GDP goes up.
Because God knows we've got enough trade issues with our televisions and refrigerators coming from China.
But, of course, I mean, GDP is all a nonsense anyway. I mean, you know, anybody who actually looks at economics rather than studies economics, I suggest anyone who says they've studied economics doesn't know what they're talking about. You just got to look at economics. You don't need to study it, and you look at it, and it's all nonsense.
Well, that was the central tenet of that wonderful interview that John Fox acquired for the interview series where he is from the individual, the gentleman who described it as wowsernomics.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's out there, and that's available on the headonradionetwork.com website. And I suggest that anyone who you know, here's what you're saying and what we're talking about here. Go and listen to that because he turns it on its head.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I suggest everyone do more than that. Listen to that and then type into Google free MP3s, class warfare or class struggle. See what you get. You'll get loads. And, I mean, you know, until we start looking at it in a holistic manner, until we start going, America's constantly involved in wars. Why is America involved in wars? Let's forget the propaganda. Let's forget the 500 incubating babies in a country of 1 million people were turfed out of their incubators because the Iraqis are evil. Let's forget all that. That probably didn't happen. And look at why. And it's always about money. And it's 99% of the time, well, 90% of the time about oil, and the other 10% of the time it's about drugs. Because they're the two biggest deals, drugs and oil.
Well, yeah, and, I mean, you know, take it the next step. You know, it was sort of just tangentially mentioned on the news, but Toyota moved into second place in the United States in terms of the of auto manufacture. Ford is now in third.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're at the point where these oligarchs are even sacrificing the very bottom ground level parts of our infrastructure.
Well, yeah, but you see, it's because they've gone to a point where they don't see it as their infrastructure anymore. I mean, it used to be that your oligarchs were evil, vicious, fascist thugs, but at least they were working for a country, and that was yours. Since Reagan, laser man. Oh, that was a good one. Nice one, Ronald. Since him, your corporate America is no longer America. It's just corporate. And that they don't give a damn where they ruin, because they might live in America. They probably live for some months in America and for some months in the Caribbean and so on. But, you know, they don't give a damn about your country as a country, and they certainly don't give a crap about human beings as people. So what does it matter to them if a bunch of middle-class and white-collar workers in Ford and the blue-collar workers in Ford all get laid off?
So much of that was born out in... You know, I love the opportunity to sit down and watch the occasional movie. I don't get a lot of opportunity, but I sat down and watched last weekend The Constant Gardener.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Rafe Fiennes, how you get R-A-L-P-H into Rafe, I'll never know, but that's one for you over there.
R-A-L-P-H, yeah, his name's Ralph.
No, it's Rafe, and his brother's Ralph, name's yeah. J-O-S-E-P-H, and I never understood why that's Joseph and not Jafe.
No, well, his name is Ralph Fiennes. If he wants to change it to Rafe Fiennes because it sounds better in the States, well, that's okay, but it's not his real name, so let's move on.
I mean, there's not some weird little niche of, you know, some dialect in England where Ralph is Rafe.
No.
Okay,
Ralph is Ralph.
Okay, just checking. But it was...
Oh, and by the way, Boehner is not Boehner. His name's Boehner.
Yeah, it's Boehner. It's Boehner in German.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's, what's his name, Mike Wiener?
Yeah.
Now Savage.
The Savage Wiener. but, no, just to finish up the thought, if you haven't seen that film, Andy, I recommend that you do.
I'm pretty sure I have, but...
Because it's everything we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a multinational pesticide company hooked up, and I'm not going to do any spoiling, multinational pesticide company hooked up with a multinational drug company,
yeah.
Hooked up with another multinational who created 1,200 jobs in Wales.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, evil, nasty, rotten things happen. And if you watch the movie all the way through, there's a little disclaimer by John le Carré at the end where he says, look, you know, none of this is real. None of this actually happened. And I'm grateful to God that it didn't, but the fact of the matter is, based on my study of world events, what I've described in this film and in this book is lightweight stuff.
Yeah, just as real as reality, and probably a hell of a lot nicer, yeah.
And it's a beautiful, it is absolutely a beautiful film.
Yeah, well, it explains things well. I mean, you know, we live in a system where the corporation doesn't just look for dollars. It looks for dollars in the next 3 months. And that's why we look at things and go, how can they pollute that area so badly? I mean, they won't be able to make money in future. It's because they don't think about it in a year. They don't think about it in 10 years. 10 years, definitely not. A year, barely. It's kind of the misty future.
Right. They'll be back in 100, maybe. The classic example of that is my home state here, West Virginia, Andy. We don't have any old growth forest. I mean, up near where I went to university at Morgantown, you can drive 10 miles out of town, and there is a stand of protected wood called the Virgin Hemlocks.
Right.
Now, you can imagine it's a university setting. It engenders any number of humorous remarks. But, you know, it's this one little stand of hemlock trees that didn't get cut. If you look at pictures of where I live now, 100 years ago, the mountains were bald.
Yeah.
Because it was all timbered. You can drive out the road where I live, and you won't find a tree bigger than a foot around.
Yeah.
Because it was all timbered out, and it's been 100 years, and it's only now coming back.
Yeah.
And this is a forest that literally reached from Maine to Louisiana to the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're absolutely right. They're not worried about next year. They're worried about 3 months from now. But the thing is, they think that there's a cycle where they can come back around and rape it again in 100 years.
Mm. Yeah, well, they do. And the problem is that, of course, you know, the damage they're causing to our planet right now is such that we might not have 100 years. I mean, you were talking about the rainforest the other day. Well, frankly, that's old news, and really. You know that the actual lungs of the planet are the Earth's ocean, don't you?
Sure.
Well, it only takes a few degrees change in temperature and a few points change in acidity, and the plankton that generate the bulk of the Earth's oxygen, well, they're not plankton exactly, I can't remember what exactly they are, but, you know, microscopic plant sort of things that float in the surface layer, they'll all die. And then we're really screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the next thing you know, you're living on an iceberg.
Yeah, or in a cave with filtered air systems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, did you see Pat Robertson today, Andy?
No, I'm afraid not, no.
Pat Robertson, you know, who gets no undue amount of grief on this program. Pat Robertson, I guess his air conditioner went out or something.
Right.
There in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And he's decided global warming is real.
Oh, I heard someone saying that he had, yeah.
You know, I expect by next week we'll hear that global warming is real and it's a sign of the rapture.
Well, quite possibly.
I mean, he's insane. Move on. I know.
He is. But, you know, hey, look, if he seriously believes it, then excellent, quite frankly. You know,
because maybe then he'll get his little knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful to believe it, too.
Absolutely.
Because we're not talking about an article of faith here. We're talking about stuff backed up by facts. There's that stupid word I hate so much.
Fact doesn't help for these people. They don't give a damn about facts. You know, basically, it's enough for him to have been converted. Because it's not like he can go back on his stance now, is it? You know, he's made the statement. He's got to stick with it. And to be fair, at least, you know, give him credit, he does stick with what he says.
Yeah, including I bench press 2,500 pounds with my skinny little legs.
Well,
sure.
Bob, that's down to the Lord's milkshake.
Yeah. Andy, I'm going to roll on.
Cool, man.
Have yourself a great weekend, all right?
I will do. Can you pop me back to Agnes?
Bye. Sure. Stand by.
Cheers.
Okay, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break. Agnes, find something fun. Now, when we come back, I don't know if you followed this or not, but I want us to have a little chat out on the front porch. Have a little chat about Senator Conrad Burns, Republican of Montana. Conrad Burns. It's hard, you know, it's hard for me to see the name Burns associated with a Republican and not just immediately go all Simpsons and, excellent, release the hounds. But anyway, that's where we're going when we come back. Or your phone calls, if you're so inclined. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Has resulted in the unthinkable.
Hell has frozen over.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The Teamsters oppose the pensions overhaul bill in the U.S. Senate because in some cases it allows companies to reduce vested benefits, deferred compensation pension money earned by workers. Teamsters Legislative Director Fred McLuckie.
And these are benefits that our members have earned and are expecting to receive when they retire.
The United Steelworkers are joining the Teamsters in opposition to the pensions bill. McLuckie says it's likely to pass, but
this fight won't end. We'll be fighting at the bargaining table as best we can to make sure that our pensions are secure for our members.
As United States car manufacturers begin looking towards broad international plans, the union representing many auto workers in the U.S. is following suit. Last week, United Auto Workers President Ron Gettelfinger met with the Confederation of Japan Automobile Workers Union to encourage stronger bonds when it comes with dealing with common issues. The UAW has been seeking to organize plants owned by Japanese car makers in the United States, such as Toyota. They have had little success, and it is speculated that the cross-border discussions may lead to a coordinated international push.
Supporters of a real minimum wage hike want to defeat a bill up for a vote right now in the U.S. Senate because it would increase the minimum too slowly and has big tax breaks for rich heirs attached that will have an adverse impact on federal programs for the poor in the future. Holly Sklar of Let Justice Roll.
What we want them to do is, at a minimum, pass the Fair Minimum Wage Act, which has been on the table over and over and over again, the Fair Minimum Wage Act, which is a clean bill. That is, it doesn't mix up the minimum wage with other issues.
More information on the minimum wage issue is available at letjusticeroll.org.
Will it be business and not government that solves the health care crisis? Walmart CEO Lee Scott suggested just that on Charlie Rose's PBS show. Scott, whose company is repeatedly attacked for not offering decent wages and reasonable health care options to employees, said he believes the country is at a tipping point when it comes to addressing the issue. Scott added that business won't be alone in pushing the government towards a solution. He said labor will also play a major role.
Here's today's economic report. America's huge gap between rich and poor has gotten so bad even Bush's Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson has it on a short list of the country's top four economic challenges. The bad news is that Paulson puts what he calls entitlement programs, you know, like the Social Security you spend a lifetime of hard work earning, at the top of his list of reforms. That's code for cuts in those programs. Paulson so far isn't offering any solutions to the huge have-have-not gap in the U.S. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Minutes before the hour, Conrad Burns. Now this is a character study. This is a character study in the Republican Republican mind. It starts out with $5 million, $5 million to fund a study to teach And, you know, I'm an ecological kind of natural sort of guy. You know, no, I mean, okay. If it weren't for the fact that my lovely wife is deadly allergic, I would love to have a couple of hives of honeybees. And I'd love to have some fruit trees planted, apples, peaches, pears, plums, grapevines, so that they could, you know, go and gather and make honey with, because that's wonderful. And then, you know, take the honey and, among other things, make mead. I love mead. It's wonderful stuff. You should try it sometime. We flavor ours back when we used to make it with ginger and lemon peel. Fabulous. And you can sort of channel your inner Beowulf when you drink it. So I like honeybees, what marvelous creatures they are. But of course, in the hands of a Republican, they can always be perverted to something else. Montana researchers, this is from the Billings Gazette. Montana researchers' vision of honeybees swarming across a field to detect landmines in Afghanistan or roadside bombs in Iraq may get a $5 million boost after Senator Conrad Burns, Mont, included the funding in a Defense Department spending bill. Now, bear in mind, we had a headline a week ago, of some more soldiers who died because, and exclusively because, they were not afforded adequate body armor. Now, I'm anti-war. I don't think they've got any business there. But to the extent that a nation has to defend itself against aggression from other nations, you know, then you've got to have a military. I would like to have a military where the soldiers come first. Where body armors come before, dare I say it, honeybees. The researchers believe they are on the verge of perfecting a briefcase-size system that can be carried around and deployed easily using laser technology. I mean, wait a minute. Laser technology? Is this the part where Dr. Evil says he wants sharks with lasers on their heads? Freaking lasers! Using laser technology to track bees that have been trained to find explosives. Jerry Bromanschenk is a research professor at the University of Montana. He submitted the funding request. Man, that takes some stones. I need $5 million for honeybees. Million. $5 million. This is, no, Andy's right. This is a perverse society. Dolphins that swim around looking for landmines. Oh, look, Flipper's 500 feet in the air. Guess he found one. Don't talk about Flipper. They're on a par or better than dogs. We're asking for a chance to show it can work in various applications. If Congress, well, we're talking about Republicans. I was about to say if Congress loses its mind, but, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Kincaid, you're assuming facts, not in evidence. Minds, Republicans. If Congress approves the money, it would flow through the U.S. Army and then to a joint effort involving the University of Montana, Montana State University, private companies in the state to build and deploy a bomb-detecting system based on bees. Now, is this, work with me here, please. Because I'm, you know, I've got my fertile little imagination. And I'm trying to figure out how this works. You got a briefcase of bees, we know that. And we know there are lasers involved. Now, see, so a bomb threat gets called in, say, at the school. And the guys with the briefcases and the lasers and the bees show up and turn the bees loose in the school. I mean, and then they turn on the lasers. I mean, there's got to be something in this that's just wrong. I've got to be misinterpreting this. I've got to be misunderstanding this, Agnes.
Children, hide the Game Boys, get rid of the Blackberries, and ditch the cell phones. Put your principle first.
I mean, or are the bees all in the briefcase, and it's sort of like a how the old timers used to witch for water veins when they were digging a well, you know, and you just.
What sort of leashes are they going to have?
No, honey, they're loose inside the briefcase. $5 million.
Do you realize how insane? I mean, you're not going to train a bee to go and come back to you.
Stephen Rice, professor of electronics at the University of Montana, said, "When Jerry first approached me to be part of this group, I snickered." Congratulations, Mr. Rice, for your restraint, because I would have laughed out loud. We've gone through the prototyping. We've built a couple. We've tested them. I think we have a high degree of accuracy, and I think it works well. Stand back. I've got the bees. Oh, Mrs. Smendrick. I need to come into your first grade classroom. Ah, a bee! I mean, we got youngish children. Our youngest is a fourth grader now, who screams bloody murder at the sight of a spider 30 feet away. This is going to work real good. Oh, yes, I understand. It's potentially life-saving, blah, 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 blah. $5 million? Really? $5 million? So that's what Conrad Burns has been working on. The aptly named Conrad Burns. Why? Because there's more than one Conrad Burns story. The next Conrad Burns story has to do, you know, there's been some wildfires in Montana. Montana can be a very dry place in summer. Yeah, and Conrad is also running a rather, shall we say, vulnerable congressional race. He's another one of those people who could very easily help provide us with a Democratic majority in the Senate, and now he's trying even harder. There have been wildfires in Montana, and they have been serious enough that Montana itself could not deal with them. So consequently, a crew called the Hot Shots traveled 2,000 miles from Stanton, Virginia, to dig fire lines for about a week around 143 square mile wildfire east of Billings. So they got done with their job. They got done with their job. They did what they were there to do. And they were in the airport. They were in the airport getting ready to go home, if I understand this correctly. It was July 23rd. Conrad Burns is there, too. 2,000 miles from Stanton, Virginia to Billings, Montana. Conrad Burns is there, and he goes up to these people and said, "You guys have done a piss-poor job." Quoting, not using the dirty words myself, quoting. "You guys have done a piss-poor job," and this is according to an official state report and the U.S. Forest Service. He said he was expressing frustration of ranchers who were critical of the way the fire was handled. Now, it turns out that Conrad Burns pointed to one firefighter and said, "See that guy over there? He hasn't done a goddamn thing." You know, and how do you... This is not light work, digging fire trenches. This is hard, dangerous, back-breaking work. But this is a Republican. This is how they are. Oh, but Bob, you're judging all Republicans by one Republican. Yes, I am, because the same stinking me mindset runs through the entire ethically dead, morally bankrupt, stinking party. And the Forest Service dispatch log said, quote, "Conrad Burns at BIL Airport verbally attacking Augusta IHC crew member." That's the Augusta County, Virginia area. When the Kincaids first came over running away from the King of England, they landed and wound up in Augusta County, Virginia. So that area means a little something to me. And to travel 2,000 miles to have some no-good, godforsaken, motherless, soulless Republican tell you that while you've been out there sweating so that his house wouldn't get burnt down, risking your life and having... You've done a piss-poor job. I mean, compare and contrast, if you will. Max Baucus, Senator, Democrat from Montana, actually had a family member die in George Bush's meat grinder in Iraq. Conrad Burns, not so much. Conrad Burns, you know, he's got plenty of time to sit around and verbally abuse people risking their lives for his property. You tell me, does this man deserve... to remain in the United States Senate under any set of circumstances? Let's go to the phones. Richard is with us. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay, I think.
Good.
I have a couple interesting experiences to report. Let me just check in on this. How shall I say? The FM transmitter business, the idea being to be able to listen to you guys while I'm walking around the house.
Yeah.
And so far I haven't struck pay dirt because what I've come up with is transmitters that cover an advertised distance of about 30 feet, and it's just not enough.
No. And probably there's a lot of FCC business tied up with that, isn't there?
I'll bet there isn't, actually, you know, because 30 feet is very little, and that's probably hyperbole, you know?
Yeah, that's 30 feet downhill with a tailwind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, if I see one that says it'll do 60 feet, well, you know, that'll at least get the 35 feet into my kitchen, and then I can hear you while I'm washing dishes, and it's like regular radio. Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm after. And
well, you know, I hope you can succeed with this, Richard, because once you do, I hope you will share your recipe for success with other folks here.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I'm good at this. It's just that, and if anybody has any product information, I'd like to know about it as well. You know, I'm just sort of looking at Craigslist in my own area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of stuff on there. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. By the way, my congressman is George Miller, and I'm proud of him.
You should be.
Boy. And this thing about working for the miners out your way, I don't know what's motivating him, but I cannot see any political payback for him in that.
No, I think George Miller's just got a sense of doing the right thing.
Yeah. I do, too.
I mean, he's solidly behind organized labor and working people, working class people there in California. And I think it just carries over into his everyday life.
I do too, and considering that there's a lot of wealth in the area that he represents, as well as poverty. You know, I think he hangs out in a city called Concord, California. And that's sort of surrounded by a high degree of affluence. So I don't know what that says.
You know, I need to get him on the program one of these evenings.
I would love that.
And I would bet that, you know, being West Virginia-based, we might have a reasonable chance of actually getting him.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what all has he done for you, you know, for your people?
It was him, it was Nick Ray Hall, maybe it was Bobby Scott, they were the first ones when the Republicans in Congress would not afford the grieving relatives of the Sago miners to even have their say in Congress. He was the one that made that happen for Nick Ray Hall.
Okay.
Because he chairs one of those particular subcommittees.
Uh-huh.
Or is the ranking minority member. And he made it possible for those people to at least have a say and be able to stand there and or go to Washington. And you know, it's kind of pathetic, Richard, that they had to beg, but they were able to go to Washington and beg for a little bit of relief from the Republican Congress. So that more people didn't have to die in more holes. Now,
that's
it turns
obscene.
Out that they did, but, you know,
yeah,
they tried.
Oh, that's obscene. I have a three other items on my list here.
Sure.
And we may be running over time.
Well, yeah, what we can do, if you don't mind, if we run out of time, I'll put you on hold. We'll get through the news and we'll come
that's
back.
Great. So,
okay,
that's
don't,
great.
Don't worry about it. It's Friday night, man. This is freeform stuff.
Okay. Well, you know, the funny thing that came to my mind while we're talking is that, believe it or not, there is a sort of a coal mine in George Miller's district.
Really?
Yeah. There was this, it's a state park now, or a district park. It's called Black Diamond Mines, and it was a coal mine.
They probably started out looking for gold and hit coal.
Well, I actually have seen some coal in railroad cars here in California. I just don't know why they're there.
Well, it's probably coming from Montana and Wyoming.
Yeah, that would make sense. Well, here's the first thing. Finishing up on that FM radio business in the house, there's a second component that people need, which I will call an audio breakout box. And that's a little box that goes in the cord between your computer and your speakers. And you can patch in for the transmitter through that box.
Okay, so it's all, the audio is all the way already on the way out of the computer, and this takes it and sends it to the transmitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on its way out of the computer into the speaker, so we need to break into that cord so we can tap in. And it's very simple. I made one for myself, and I don't think I've seen anything on the market. It's just so simple, you know.
Wow, this is intriguing.
Yeah, and if my old bench technician, I used to work in stereo and custom stereo, you know, my old bench technician was still alive, I would just ask him to whip these things up and sell them, because he was a wonderful solderer, which I am not.
Well, you know, if you perfect this thing, Richard, I think there might be some money in it for you.
There's nothing to perfect. It is so, I mean, we're talking dirt simplicity.
Well, I mean, you're still looking for the right transmitter.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So we need the transmitter. And by the way, these transmitters, I figure, are worth something like between $9 and $12, depending upon which part of China they come from. Okay?
Yeah.
And they're being sold right now with a $40 and up price tag because they changed the packaging, and now it says iPod on it.
New and improved.
Typical, huh?
New and improved. Richard, yes. Hold that thought, please, and we will come back after the news and continue this conversation.
Cool, okay.
All right, stand by.
All right.
Okay, so this is fascinating. I love the technological, innovative urge that all of this stuff engenders in folks. We'll be back. Right, the news is coming. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. Israel destroyed roadways and bridges today, including the last major road linking Lebanon to Syria. The goal of the operation was to seal off routes through which Syria could arm Hezbollah militants. At least three people were killed in those attacks, which the UN says are hampering relief efforts. At least 40 Lebanese were killed in today's clashes, 33 of them farm workers near the Syrian border. About 50 people are reportedly buried underneath the rubble of collapsed buildings. Meanwhile, at least two Israeli civilians were killed today in Hezbollah rocket launches. In Washington, officials with the State Department say they'll work through the weekend to reach a deal about a ceasefire. Yesterday, France circulated a draft resolution at the UN that calls for an immediate end to the fighting. In the Gaza Strip today, Israeli soldiers killed two Palestinians in the area where gunmen seized an Israeli soldier last month. Earlier, four people were wounded in airstrikes on militant targets. In Iraq, dozens of people died today in scattered violence, including two U.S. Marines in Anbar province. 3,500 U.S. troops are being redeployed from Mosul to Baghdad to help with security. In southern Afghanistan today, coalition troops killed 25 Taliban insurgents. A NATO convoy was targeted by a suicide bomber, but no casualties were reported. Four Canadian NATO troops were killed there yesterday. In Washington, a military prosecutor is arguing for a court-martial for four U.S. soldiers accused of murdering three Iraqi prisoners last May. The case is one of several in which American troops have been charged with murder, rape, and other abuse. Also in Washington, officials have imposed sanctions against seven countries, including Russia and India. U.S. officials believe companies based in those countries have transferred missile-related technology to Iran. The federal government is trying to entice companies to build nuclear plants. Today, the Energy Secretary announced $2 billion in federal insurance will be available for the construction of six new plants. In Arizona, law enforcement officials have arrested two men in connection with sniper attacks in the Phoenix area. Six were killed, 17 wounded. The killings began more than a year ago. In Mexico, officials say they will decide tomorrow whether to recount ballots in the country's disputed presidential election. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Job growth was weak last month, with the economy adding only 113,000 jobs. That's down from a revised gain of 124,000 in June. During the same period, the number of unemployed Americans rose to a five-month high of nearly 5%. Mortgage rates are down for the second week in a row to a nationwide average of 6.63%. That's the lowest since mid-June. U.S. Airways is cutting fares on its hourly shuttle between Boston and New York. The move could trigger a low-fare battle with JetBlue Airways. Walmart says it will install banks at its Mexican stores once it receives approval. Walmart has more than 800 stores in Mexico. Berkshire Hathaway reports a 62% jump in second quarter earnings. The investment company reports net earnings of $2.35 billion compared with $1.45 billion this time last year. But Goodyear reports a 97% drop in second quarter profit. The tire maker blames changes related to plant closings and higher costs for materials. Toyota reports a 39% jump in profit for its first fiscal quarter. The company says it expects another year of record earnings. Light sweet crude settled at $74.76 today. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 2 points at 11,240. NASDAQ down 7 at 2085. S&P 500 flat at 1279. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. 6 minutes after the hour, Friday evening. And straight back to the phone, we've been having a conversation with our good friend Richard in Northern California in the Bay Area. Richard, are you still there?
Yeah, sure.
Great,
sure.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so we've been talking about audio, and this message goes out to Jim.
Jim, yes.
Get off that speakerphone, man. We deserve to hear what you're saying.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, because Jim is so cool. I really want to be able to understand what he's saying.
But
maybe we should take up a collection to get him a regular corded telephone. What do you think?
I don't know. I think we'd have to hear from Jim on that one. You know, it's interesting. During the break, apparently what you're doing, someone else is already doing as well. And he's in our chat room, Richard.
Yeah.
Our friend Lottie up in Massachusetts, and he's got a transmitter assembly going where he sends about 100 feet catty cornered to his house so his neighbor can listen to the show.
Is this a commercial product?
What I suggested and what he's going to do, he's going to send me basically the nuts and bolts of what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll shoot me another email, please, then I'll turn it around and forward it to your address.
Excellent.
Because he said he's doing 100 feet through two walls.
That's exactly what we all need. I mean, I think this is the one thing that's going to be able to make internet radio comparable, at least within a house, to listening to the radio.
Yeah, I really agree.
You know, because then I can walk around the house just with an ordinary cheap Walkman, you know, or, you know, a $6 FM radio from that.
Sure.
That radio from the closeout store, you know, and that'll do it.
And, you know, the other side of that, Richard, is also that we're constantly trying to upgrade our technology here, too.
Yeah.
So presently, we will the stream will be active at all times, and at any time that a live program is not running on the horn, there will be a repeat of one of the previous programs.
Okay, very cool.
So it'll be a 24-hour live stream. So you know, if you, unless you've got a reason for you know going away from it, as long as that thing's running, you'll have something that you can tune into at whatever frequency you're broadcasting.
Yeah, that's very good because I really listen to the horn on replay. You know. MP3 downloads from White Rose.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just listening to you from a week ago. It's kind of schizoid, you know.
Yeah, time tunnel
and
stuff.
I talked to Bob, and he's talking about something else.
Well, let me
get on to good topics.
Well, let me throw one other thing to you real quick, Richard.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've checked out Dr. Bill yet or not.
I downloaded him. Haven't listened to it yet.
I think you're going to be very very pleased because he brings an approach that, honest to God, I can't find anywhere else.
Okay.
You know, he comes from an academic background, and it's this real, very honest, open, candid desire to establish dialogue, and I produce the program, and I love sitting there for those 2 hours every day because it's so refreshing.
I just heard him when you did that State Fair show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded really cool. Listen, let me go on to my list here.
Sure, please.
Body armor you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, the thing that keeps jumping out at me about these neocons is that they are stingy.
Yeah, mean.
Yeah. And that's why they sent these guys out there with no body armor, was because they're too cheap to buy it.
And when I say mean, Richard, I'm thinking in terms of, well, you know, the old Christmas carol, what child is this, when it says, why lies he thus in such mean estate?
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of mean. It's
yeah.
Penny-pinching, penurious, creepy, heartless, cheap, not cheap for all the wrong reasons.
Yes.
And so, you know, we got $5 million for bees. But people are still dying for want of this body armor. Honest to God, I can't get my mind around it, Richard.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard Jack Clark's program.
No.
Blast the Right. And I talk with him about you guys. He's a lawyer, retired lawyer in California.
Oh, wow.
He's in Santa Monica, and he does this wicked program where he uses his legal mind to just destroy all the arguments of the right wing. And his philosophy, which he's aired a few times, is that the neocons are sociopaths and that they have the personalities of virtually of serial killers.
Well, it's interesting you should raise that. You may not have gotten to the podcast from, I guess, what, last Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah.
When we talked to me and that mouse in my pocket. I talked to a good friend of the show, a real live, honest-to-goodness psychologist named Rick.
Oh, I remember you were going to do that.
Yeah, Rick Goodner down in Texas. And he pulled a fast one on me, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
He whipped out his handy-dandy DSM-4 and ran me through the 7 criteria of Axis 1. And didn't tell me what I was diagnosing, but asked me to see if I could relate something about George Bush to each thing that he ticked off. And at the end of it, he told me what it was that we had just run him through. And it was sociopathy.
Okay. Oh.
And in order to qualify for an Axis 1 diagnosis, you've only got to get 3 out of 7, and we nailed him with all 7.
All of them, yeah. Well, he makes a very good case. In other words, these people really are sadistic and take pleasure in misery, suffering, and death of people who, you know, who they lord it over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, that was the body armor. You know, when I was in college, I'm older than you. Nixon was running for office, and I was in Connecticut. I was a student at the University of Connecticut.
Go Huskies.
Huh?
Go Huskies.
I didn't quite
understand. I said, go Huskies.
Oh, yeah, right. And, you know, one day I got very upset because I thought Nixon might get elected. And he did, and Connecticut went for him, and I went, what the hell is going on here? This is a Democratic state. And then I got it. Here was the logic that I had. It was that all the industry in the state had left, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Mark Twain invested in the typewriter. Well, the typewriter industry, there were at least 2 companies in Hartford that made typewriters.
Right.
They were gone, you know, Underwood and I think Royal.
Mm-hmm.
They were gone. The thread company in the town where I was living had all gone to the south. I think they were just winding thread on spools in Willimantic, Connecticut. The hat industry in Danbury, Connecticut was gone. I mean, this is just, you know, all over New England.
Yeah.
You had this flight, and the only employer left was the defense industry. And people wanted to keep their jobs. You know, and you look at Connecticut, you got Electric Boat making the submarines, you got Sikorsky Helicopter, you got United Aircraft, you know, making jet engines,
mm-hmm.
Pratt & Whitney. These were the big employers left in the state, aside from the insurance industry. And I think what was going on was that these guys voted for Nixon because they wanted to keep their jobs.
And they perceived that somehow or another Hubert Humphrey would downgrade the war that is a pathetic place to put a human being.
Now, at this point in time, I'm just looking at this on the larger scale, you know, and most of our blue-collar jobs are in China now.
Yeah.
And what do we have left?
Bombs, GE, Rockwell, yeah. Halliburton, Kellogg Brown and Root.
Exactly.
W.R. Grace and Company, absorbed by Halliburton. Sure.
Yeah. These are healthy, viable industries in the U.S.
Death is good.
Huh?
Death is good.
Yeah, I don't like this.
No, I don't either. And the fact of the matter is, and this is one of those psychoses of the right, that if you just scratch it a little bit, you're going to get a whiff of something really dangerous and noxious. We need industry in this country.
Yeah.
But I mentioned Dr. Bill a little bit ago. He said something toward the close of his program Thursday, and it came from his perspective as an educator. He said, I see kids come in and out, and, you know, when they go to college, they don't want to get out and go and do or make anything. You know, they want to be a financial advisor to tell people what to do with the money that they got by not doing or making anything. Or they want to be a lawyer. Or they want to be a doctor. They don't want to build anything. They don't want to make anything to increase the material good of this nation. And I was just sitting there slack-jawed, Richard, because I realized it's so true. These national security goons in the Republican Party, if they understood for only an instant, and maybe they do, and that's what scares me, they do understand. They know what they're doing to this country. I honestly think some of them hate the concept of the American Republic, because if that day comes when we actually do have to fend off some level of aggression at us on our soil, you know, it's not 1941 anymore, and we can't pick up the phone and call GM and say, you know, you're not building sedans anymore, you're building tanks, and pick up the phone and call Ford and say, you know, you're not building cars anymore, you're building airplanes. We are physically unable to do that. We don't have the infrastructure.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and if we're making, tanks, they're probably going to have Chinese switches in them.
Sure.
And that this is troubling to me because, having worked in electronics, I know there's a difference in the quality of the hardware that we used to turn out in this country versus what comes in from the Orient.
Well,
we made stronger stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's a particular case in point that I sort of learned the hard way. The first microwave oven that we had lasted, Richard, forever. Or seemingly, years and years and years and years. When it burned out, we said, well, okay, we did what consumers do. We treated it as disposable merchandise because they're also darn cheap now.
That's right.
So that old American microwave, you know, off to the scrap heap with you. It wasn't worth my time to, figure out how to fix it. And went and bought a brand new cheap Asian one. It burned out in a year. You know, we're on microwave number 4, and then someone with the technical know-how explained to me that the gizmo that makes microwaves microwave, that used to be made in the United States, and they would last forever. But now they're all outsourced to Asia and China, and they are inherently unstable, and they burn out in a year.
May I ask what brand your good microwave was?
It was either a Tappan or an Amana.
Yeah, I know. Amana used to make real good ones.
And we've been through 3 bizarre branded ones.
Yeah. And some of them leak microwaves as well.
Charming.
Because the doors don't seal right.
Not at all surprising. But, in terms of what you're talking about, Richard, that's exactly where we are.
Well, when I was a kid, I hung around a TV repair shop in Brooklyn. And I remember the Japanese TVs were just coming in, and they were blowing out. And what these technicians explained to me was that when American engineers designed the product, they would put in parts that were rated at twice the working voltage that they would need in the circuit. The Japanese engineer, if he had a 120-volt circuit, would put in a part rated at 120 volts. So if the voltage went up 5 volts more, the thing would burn out. The American product would just take it in stride.
Yeah, I remember some story about back in the grand days of American industrialism when I think it was some sort of wire, and someone showed the latest thing coming from Germany.
Uh-huh.
Super fine filament, and said, you'll never get anything as fine as this. And the American engineer said, nah, you're right. And he sent it, and he sent back, a piece of filament inside the German filament, something like that.
I like that.
But that's where we used to be. But that's when we had an era that honestly believed in research and development. The story that was relayed to me, and I relayed on the program a week or so ago, about AT&T. The pre-breakup AT&T poured gazillions of dollars into research and development.
Yeah.
Created Bell Labs. They're not doing any of that now.
Yeah, Bell Labs, I think, is there's just a ghost of it left.
Right.
All they do is standards, standards work.
And the sad thing is, there was an idea in this nation once upon a time that research for research sake, it was sort of along the lines of the Latin ars gratia artis, mm-hmm. you know, art for art's sake.
Yeah.
That was beneficial. And, you know, there's a lot of people, I love the space program. And there's a lot of people on the Democratic left that take issue with me when I say that, you know, NASA needs to be fully funded and more funded. Because the technology that we get out of it is greater than the money we put into it.
Mm. Well, I believe in art for art's sake. I'm a musician by training. And I don't do it, you know, because, and I have very, very serious conservatory study behind me. Lots of, I mean, I study with 49 teachers.
Yeah. I'm losing you a little bit, Richard.
Can you hear me okay?
Ah, better now. Okay.
Yeah, I said I studied with 49 teachers. I've got 2 degrees in it, and I was a child prodigy. But there is just no work to be had. There's hardly any. So, I'm into technology more.
Well, and largely probably because of your musical background, that enabled your technological bent.
Well, I'm unusual because I started out at the age of 6 taking piano lessons. I broke the piano and I fixed it, and I took my record player apart and put it together. So it's sort of like I've been riding all 3 of these horses for the rest of my life, and it creates interesting perspectives on things. You know, and I take this strange brain of mine into high tech, and I write documentation, you know,
Mm-hmm.
And it's sometimes I really see what's wrong with products, and sometimes people don't want to hear that, you know.
But it's if there's going to be an American Renaissance, and I believe I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the Apollo Alliance. Have you ever looked at that, Richard?
Wait, this sounds familiar.
The ApolloAlliance.org. It's a plan for an American Renaissance in technology. That includes energy independence, a massive strengthening of our rail system, literally 6 million solid union jobs that we could do for the money that we have spent on 1 year of the Iraq War.
It's obscene.
Yeah, ApolloAlliance.org.
I got it.
That's going to have to happen in this country.
Well, but who's going to do it? Who's going to set it going?
Well, we're to a certain extent, we're a dog chasing its tail on this, because we don't really know where it begins. But I can say with some certainty that it begins with real political leadership, and on either side of the aisle, we're literally in a crisis of leadership in this country. I'm not talking about a demagogue.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a John Kennedy. I'm talking about a Franklin Roosevelt.
Sure.
I'll give the devil his due. I'm talking about a Dwight Eisenhower.
Yeah.
That is where it begins, Richard.
Think about Kucinich?
I love Kucinich to death. And Kucinich says all the right stuff. Now, he really rather shocked me with his vote on the House resolution giving Israel the sense of the House or whatever that it should bomb the snot out of Lebanon. That took me aback because I expected a no vote, just a straight up honest, you know, I'm against war, no vote from Dennis Kucinich. He voted present, Richard.
Hmm.
And I'm sure he would have a very good reason if you called him on it. But, you know, I was involved with his campaign in 2004 in the primary system, and I heard his words, I read his writings, and, you know, but the mainstream media wasn't interested, so all we could hear about was, you know, the bachelor, crazy presidential liberal candidate. That's all we got. And it drove every press person that he had absolutely insane. I think Will Rivers Pitt was the last press coordinator that Dennis Kucinich had in his campaign, and nobody could get him any coverage. And this is a guy who, if you go and listen to him speak, the little hairs will stand up on the back of your neck. It's that kind of leadership.
Yeah.
And to be just brutally honest, and again, trying to be bipartisan on this, if you listen to John Kerry or you listen to George W. Bush in the presidential campaign between September and November 2004, it wasn't there.
Yeah. That's right.
If any of this is going to happen, there is going to have to be a renaissance, and it is going to have to be largely a function of the vision of one or two or three people who rise up out of an absolute fetid sea of mediocrity.
Who have we got?
I don't know. I don't know where he comes from, or she. Boy, I'm such a sexist. I don't mean to be that way. I listened to Barack Obama at the Democratic Convention in 2004, and I said, man, there you go. And he's not in the Senate for 2 years, and he's gone all mealy-mouthed.
Well, Bob, this is something that I find so perplexing. You know, I think I've mentioned this before. I'm a county official. I've been appointed as a managed care commissioner.
Right. We have talked about that.
I'm one of about 17 people, helping steer this very exciting HMO that we have in my county. And so I've been appointed by a county supervisor. And, you know, looking at his record, it's like the guy walks on water. He's a voice for his constituency,
mm-hmm.
includes a lot of poor people. I mean, we're talking about the city of Richmond, California, which is has been the murder capital of the state.
Oh, man.
And it's right down the hill from where I live. We're talking real poverty here.
Yeah.
And he wants to make sure that poor people get good representation in county government. And the other county supervisors go, you know, where do these people come from?
Right, right.
You know, and yet we had a need to really contract in the health services department. I mean, we had to cut $20 million just in health services alone because the county was in the red.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, we had a look at layoffs. And I was going to him and I was saying, listen, we got some pharmacists because they're going to close the clinic pharmacies and farm them out. And I'm saying, we got some people who are solid gold in this operation, and I don't want to lose them. Like, we got one pharmacist who's a PhD, and doctors call him and ask him for advice. And he's in our system. I don't want to lose this guy. And we also have a woman who's got a Chinese heritage, and she's a pharmacist, and she knows herbal medicine along with what she's trained at Western medicine. And she's worth solid gold.
And but these people, Richard, that you're describing, you'd like to see them rise to positions where that they could where they could engage and energize and give hope to other people. But we have a political system, do we not, that actually it discourages these people from running.
Well, the thing is, it's a little different. All I'm saying is that I'm going to my supervisor, you know, to the guy who appointed me, and I say, please, let's not do this, you know, with a cleaver. Let's do this with a scalpel.
Sure.
I know we've got to cut the money. There's no way around it. Yeah, I mean, the federal government has cut funds. The state government has cut funds. Here we are on the county level. We just got to work with what we've got. It's as simple as that. So I say, can't we do this in some kind of a surgical way? Because we've got these employees who are solid gold. You know, I don't want them to go out. And I see where he's coming from. He's saying, look, I gotta cut $20 million.
Gee whiz.
And I'm listening to his voice, and I'll tell you what I hear in there is fear. You know,
yeah.
In other words, this guy cares. But you know, in the situation where he's up against the wall, he goes into kind of a fear mode. You know, and he says, "Geez, I just got to do this. We got a deadline."
Yeah.
And he gets blind. You know, there's no more time to use a scalpel.
And he's got to go in with the meat axe.
Yeah, he has to go in there with a cleaver with his whole staff and just start chopping because there just isn't the time to work with finesse. And So I think what I'm getting at, to address your point, is I'm trying to understand, you know, it looks to us like we get a politician and the guy is just wonderful. You know, and you used the case of Obama. And he's certainly a fascinating guy, you know, and he's said so many of the right things. And we wonder, you know, where did it go wrong? You know, it's like, at what point did they sell out?
Well, you know, my guess on that, Richard, to be quite candid, is that the sellout happens in the electoral process. He was, you know, when he addressed the Democratic National Convention, he was still candidate Obama.
Yes.
But when you achieve success and you're elected, and you look back and you realize the millions of dollars, and this guy, in the case of Obama, this is a guy who started out, you know, very well educated, but he started out walking the beat, walking the precinct in his neighborhoods. And asking people, what do you need? What can I do for you? How can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he steps back. Now he's a senator for all of Illinois. And, you know, he can't walk the state. And if he wants to be back in 4 more years, he's got to start raising money, you know, the day he gets sworn in.
Yep.
You know, there, like I said earlier, there is an element of tail chasing involved in some of this. But every time I look at this problem, Richard, I come back to one fundamental truth. It's the money.
Well, I think, you know, who's the beneficiary of the money? It's the broadcast industry.
In the broadcast industry, obviously, it's GE at NBC. It's Viacom at CBS. It's Disney at ABC.
Clear Channel.
I was talking with a friend about the music industry. You know, we're down to 5 or 6 recording companies. Now, when, you know, you're a musician and when you were younger, you know, God, how many record labels were there in the classical realm? How many?
Oh, geez, there were hundreds.
Sure. They're gone. They're just gone.
It seems like there are quite a few, but they have to market through these big guys.
Right. I interviewed Will Kimbrough earlier this week. He's on an independent label. He is the label, but it's marketed through Sony BMG.
That's it.
You know, so at some level, you're beholden. But with the money, where what I mean about, you know, it begins and it ends with the money. If there is an answer to this, it lies in the public financing of campaigns.
Absolutely. And I think this is a whole other topic for another day, maybe. But, you know, the follow the money thing, it's really where it lives.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Maine has tried it and has seen success. Arizona has tried it and seen success.
Yeah.
I think they tried it in the New York City Commission races and saw success. We push it every year here in West Virginia because it really is. If you want that leader, and I'm coming back, I'm doubling back to the theme. I'm trying to be a little bit rational as a host. If you want those leaders to rise to the top, if you want the cream at the top and you don't want political whey, which is where we are now,
mm-hmm.
if you want the leadership to rise to the top and you believe, as the founders of this nation did, that politics is not an occupation, that you are what you are and you happen to bend your talents toward the betterment of the nation via the political process, then the money's got to go because the money... how can I put this, Richard? The money enforces mediocrity.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much of it.
And the money feeds the consultants. If there's any particular group that I would demonize in the political process right now, it is the consultancy. It's the consultant oligarchy, if you will.
I would add the lobbyists to that.
Well, sure. I would not disagree, but, you know, John Kerry and mm-hmm. Al Gore
mm-hmm.
were both beneficiaries of multi-million-dollar consultancies,
cool.
And they had focus groups, Richard,
yeah.
And they said, And Al Gore was out on the campaign trail, and my God, for, you know, his entire political career, he has had a strong technological and environmental bent. And he would have talked about that, and when he talked about that thing that he cares about, you would have seen passion come out of Al Gore like you see now.
Indeed.
But they focus grouped him, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And in focus grouping, they said, you can't talk about that.
Yes.
And so every time he tried, there was somebody there to snap his suspenders and go, uh-uh, bad. And they did the same thing to John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
And so John Kerry winds up, you know, standing up there looking really noble and really boring.
Yep. He did. He sure was.
And, you know, meanwhile, George Bush, dumber than a bag of rocks, comes up, you know, oh, look, I got sweat stains on my blue shirt, and I'm going to roll up my sleeves just like you do. And he stands up there and babbles inanity, but he looks somehow less starched, less stiff, and more real. And I'll acknowledge that. I mean,
This reminds me of when Nixon was running against Humphrey, and Nixon was marketed. He was merchandised. Humphrey was not.
Yeah. And that was a lesson he learned in 1960.
Huh?
That was a lesson Nixon learned in 1960.
Yeah. Nixon, you were too young at the time, I guess. In the press photos of Nixon, he was shown in confident positions. He was striding forward all the time. He spoke with, what's the word I'm looking for, with definitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Humphrey, on the other hand, had none of this, and when he spoke, his voice quivered.
Well, and he sounded a little like Porky Pig to start with.
Exactly.
But, you know, and like I said, you know, this was a lesson that was born in 1960 when John Kennedy, coiffed and perfect, appeared on American television, and Richard Nixon literally melted.
Yes, I remember that.
And I mean, that's that. If you want to find a defining moment for the rise of the modern political campaign, it's there in that debate in 1960.
Yes.
Never again would a politician of any stripe allow himself to look stupid. That is, until they put Michael Dukakis in the tank and John Kerry in the sperm suit.
Hey, listen, do we have time for one more topic?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, this is a big one.
Okay.
It's going to be a story, and I'm going to have to start somewhere, so let me back up a little bit.
Yeah, find the comfortable place.
Yeah, okay. I am fascinated with audio history as it regards the way that people performed. Because let's say back in the period of 78 RPM records, you couldn't have a continuous performance of a classical piece of music. You had to stop to turn over the record.
Sure.
And it just wrecked a lot of music. Because they had to stop, you know, in the middle of the piece. Well, so the development of the LP just blew that away, and it provided a way to, all of a sudden, now we could have continuous, you know, a real serious continuous performance recorded. And so I have an interest in how the development of the technology has changed the way that people play. And for that reason, I'm very interested in following the technology itself. And I'm considered to be an expert on certain aspects of phonographs. And so I got involved with a website that somebody set up that's involved with an obscure brand of Swiss turntable that a lot of people have been very devoted to, and there's been no information whatsoever on them. And a lot of people, the guy who set it up is in England, so he's got two websites. And one of those websites is devoted to, you know, just a normal website. The other website is a bulletin board.
Mm-hmm.
And he got bored with all of this, and he asked me to take over the bulletin board. And so I did. Now, people are contributing, you know, talking from all over the world, and they're struggling with English. You know, let's say if somebody is in Germany, and everybody's writing in English. Now, what the guy who set it up didn't realize is the location of the bulletin board. The location physically is in Southern California.
Hmm.
He didn't know that. And so when I took over the administration of the bulletin board, I checked up on the terms of use, you know, the conditions. Now, I have contributed about 500 articles to this bulletin board.
Okay.
Where people ask questions, and I give answers, and a lot of them turn into articles. So I have a personal investment in making sure that this bulletin board is safe. And I start looking at the terms of use, and I find this one-liner that says, all material on this site has to be in the English language, right? And two guys just started having a conversation in German. And so I started a new topic, and I said, you know, we got a problem. The terms of our host are that we can only conduct our stuff in English.
Mm-hmm.
And a few people got really bent out of shape and got mad at me. Now, they all know that I'm an American.
Right, so it seemed like some sort of snobbery.
Well, yeah, it seemed to them, even though I explained very carefully and very respectfully that this is not something that I'm imposing on people, but this is, you know, the terms of...
It puts the entire operation at risk.
Exactly. Well, behind my back, a lot of people submitted complaints to the guy who set it up. He was deluged with complaints about me. And I suddenly found myself out of a job.
Huh. Jeez.
I turned on the machine yesterday. I came in and I found a notice that said I had been removed as the site administrator.
No good deed goes unpunished.
So, but you know what I think happened is that there's a lot of people around the world who have a lot of resentment against America and Americans. And I think I just got it. You know?
Oh yeah, I think you tapped right into the wellspring of it.
Yeah. It's like everything was fine, you know. I was providing a lot of technical help to people, and you know, it's like all of a sudden I put this thing out there and oh my God, the fur flew.
Sure.
I still don't have a communication about what really happened.
And how fascinating with all of that, Richard, because as I have learned in the last few months, because it's not something you just walk around thinking about, there are more English speakers in India than there are in the United States. There are more English speakers in China than there are in the United States. But it is the hubris of the American people, and I've seen this in operation myself. It's the hubris of the American traveler who goes to France, and rather than hauling out the little Berlitz book and stumble, you know, you'll be respected for stumbling over the language if because you're trying.
Yeah, yeah.
You're acknowledging the culture.
Yes, and I tried like hell to do that, you know, in what I wrote. And it's like, you know, and then I came in, I said, my God, what did I do wrong, you know? And I blamed myself. I said, geez, I must have done something arrogant or something.
You know? No, you did. I don't think you did anything wrong or arrogant, Richard. For the last 6 years, for the last 5.5 years, the administration in this country has done something wrong and has done something arrogant. I remember when a T-shirt was available in the, and it was written in the seven languages, or what, how many, I don't remember, 4, 5, 6, 7 official languages of the UN, and it said, I apologize, our president is a total moron.
Yeah.
And it was in, and you could, and it was interesting because you could order it without the English translation or with it.
Yeah.
But they sold like hotcakes. Because... to us, you know, for good or ill, we are judged. We are judged by our political choices. You know, I heard through the Monica Lewinsky thing, years. You know, the Republicans on the right, words have meaning. You're
yeah.
darn right they do. Words
but
like
I feel, you know, I feel personally hurt by this.
Sure.
I can't tell you how much because it's like I've poured a whole lifetime worth of audio experience into this.
Well, I think you've got to have a communication with the original guy, because I mean, if he allows if the rules are what you say the rules are, and he in turn allows and he flouts them, he runs the real risk of being having an X message board, because these rules are very real, And given, you know, I'm sorry, I don't mean to just make this free form or range the way I do, but the fact of the matter is, Richard, if he allows those rules to be flouted and that host allows the rules to be flouted, one of those little technicalities is more than enough to allow the NSA or the Department of Director National Intelligence, whatever, to come swooping down on that website. And the next thing you know, you got FBI guys carrying
yes,
servers out of buildings, and you're out of business.
You have put your thumb exactly on it because, like I said, these guys are in Southern California, and the guy who set it up is in England. He doesn't know.
Mm-mm.
I asked him, do you know where the site is? He says, no. I tracked it down to a little suburban street in some Southern California town. And, you know, so it's probably, you know, like you. You're over there behind Hawk's Nest State Park, right?
Yeah.
So he started something in his kitchen, you know, and it just blossomed. And he's got a million bulletin boards right now. But I did enough research on the site to see that the guys have already dumped bulletin boards. Without any warning, bam,
gone.
Ancient history, and I mean he's done it. And the only thing that I can find there that says what is his motive, it is he said for security reasons. And
it's his security. This is his investment.
Yeah.
And when the FBI, a little microcosm of that. I'm certainly no defender of him, but when William Jefferson, when Bush's thugs marched into the Capitol building and took out all of his computers, you know, they didn't necessarily just hurt Congressman William Jefferson. They hurt every constituent who had communicated electronically with William Jefferson.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're talking about this because you just provided a little piece of perspective that I wasn't thinking about. I mean, my head was kind of wrapped around these people are concerned that somebody's going, you know, that terrorist is going to start communicating in foreign languages.
Yeah.
On his board.
And see, that's the uber paranoia of these cowards. They're cowards, Richard. They really are. They're sitting, you know, I've pointed out, maybe you heard it, the one, you know, I watched the movie A Beautiful Mind. And, you know, as the protagonist goes through the process and he begins to lose his mind and he's out there in the little work shed and he's trying to build code out of a snippet from Boy's Life and Highlights for Children and the Reader's Digest and Field and Stream and in his mind it's all working because he's quite mad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's he's trying to build the code. That is exactly what's going on in the NSA. It is paranoid madness.
Yeah.
They're not going to do code in English. And if we're smart enough to think that we could listen in on their phone calls, they're darned well smart enough to figure out that they're being listened to.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, where this comes home to me, there's another personal aspect to this, which is that I've worked a lot in high tech. You know, as a tech writer, freelance tech writer, I go in and out of these companies and projects, and I'm like a kid in a candy store. You know, technologically,
sure,
it's just wonderful. I mean, I hate to say it, but I finally figured out how people can enjoy making bombs. You know?
Yeah.
Because there's the creativity of it in the mind of the engineer. I used to wonder about that. I think I'm onto something now.
Yeah, I imagine it's quite fun to be a very well-paid engineer, GE or whoever's built, you know, builds
right.
the bombs.
Right.
Because
yeah,
it's an
it's
an academic esoteric exercise to them.
Yeah, and as the tech writer, I am usually the only person on a project who can emulate the role of the end user. And I'm also I guess it's with that tripartite background that I described before, is that I can analyze the computer interface and I can say, no, let's not call it Framus Veeblefetz or let's call it Exit, you know? And let's make the escape key work. Why the hell is it on the keyboard? Let's make it do something.
Isn't that the truth?
You know, and let's take this this button on the screen and move it from the lower right to the upper left where it should go. You know, and I work at this, and I love doing it. I'm a polisher. you know, and the thing, and I love doing it. And so the thing is that I see so much software that is created that is user hostile.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that the programmers are doing what they're supposed to do. I can't really find fault with them because what they're trying to do is make sure that the code works and it's bulletproof.
Yeah.
And that's a tremendous responsibility. You know,
yeah, they're operating.
Programmers are listening. It's like I want to say I acknowledge, you know, the hard work that you guys have to do to make sure that a routine ends properly. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot to that. And so I'm used to working with really poor software when it comes to the user, and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming back, tying this together with this bulletin board I was talking about, let me name it. It's called ProBoards. And the thing that is so amazing about it is how well it's crafted. From the user's point of view, it's a pleasure to use this service.
Mm-hmm.
The bulletin boards work. They're not perfect, but everything functions in a logical way that is user-friendly. And that's unusual. So I have to say, wow, you know, I am really impressed with what these guys have cobbled together.
So, and they've obviously poured a lot of energy and a lot of care into what they're doing.
Exactly.
All the more reason for them to be rather,
kept alive, perhaps.
Well, yeah, or for them to be very, very astute in observing that the rules that are set forth be followed.
Yeah, and so I put this into my talking about, you know, about these guys when I spoke to the membership on this bulletin board about why I felt that this service was good and, you know, why I admired it and what their requirement was. And I think it just set off this whole barrage of, you know, of anti-American backlash.
Well, there's room for it. It grieves me to say it, Richard, but there's room for it. You know, you're experiencing it on a real world, in a real world, real time basis.
And I've heard about this kind of thing. I've heard that American businesses abroad are actually suffering. It was a Norwegian academic I heard on the radio one day was talking about it. He says they won't go out and demonstrate. They just won't spend so much money in Walmart.
Yeah.
You know, and they won't eat at McDonald's today. You know, and it's subtle.
But yeah, but it's well a classic case in point for that is the. The rise of, I forget what the brand name of it is, Muslim Cola or something, and it's an alternative to Pepsi and Coke, and it sells like crazy in the Muslim world because it's an opportunity to have a very popular beverage, and yet know at the same time that you're not contributing to the economy that is burying your babies in rubble.
Oh, boy.
And people vote with it, you know, maybe... We constantly hand-wring and wonder, Richard, in this country, you know, how can a guy who's got four kids and he makes $21,000 a year go out and vote Republican? You know, you're actively, physically voting against your own interests.
Yeah.
Well, the rest of the world understands the concept, and they darn well will vote with their wallets. And so... it's no skin off somebody's nose to not go to McDonald's or not go to Burger King or not drink a Coke, some American product. It's no big deal. You know, there's no open hardship for the person doing it. But if more and more people do it over time, the corporate bean counters are darn well going to notice.
Well, what Walmart just did was they just pulled out of Germany
and South Korea.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know about that one.
Yeah. Because it wasn't working.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we just opened a brand new Walmart Supercenter. You know the region a little bit. Over across the river in Fayetteville on top of literally the dead of the Civil War. Built on a Civil War graveyard, this Walmart Supercenter. And you could not get into the parking lot, Richard.
I know that. Oh, isn't that terrible?
You know, it's the same Walmart. It's, you know, the little C Catholic, you know? Yeah. Universal. One Walmart looks like just like the next, but by golly, this was the new one. And so, you know, the better part of Fayette County went over there to go, golly.
Do me a favor, Bob. I don't know, you know, I know little pockets of West Virginia. I don't know where Fayetteville is.
Well, it's basically across the New River from Hawk's Nest.
From where?
From Hawk's Nest.
Oh, over there. Oh,
yeah.
What a travesty.
Yeah.
Beautiful country that is.
Yes. And it was, and I mean, it was a real, you know, it's a real historically valuable place. It is literally the place where during the Civil War, the concept of indirect artillery fire was invented. Instead of, you know, pointing the gun at, the, you know, you figure out the azimuth and the range and the wind and the, you know, that's where that all happened. Now it's got a Walmart on it.
Oh, boy. And everybody's mobbing it, right?
Oh, yeah. You can't get in the place. Well, but you know, you're going, it's like the bear went over the mountain, you know, to see what he could see, and all he could see was the other side of the mountain. It's another stinking Walmart.
People don't realize they're shooting themselves in the foot. It's just like what you said, people vote against themselves. You know,
yeah.
What's wrong with Kansas, that business.
Exactly, exactly.
I hit it at first when I came to California in 1971. And I started noticing how corrupt the politics was in San Francisco. And there was a guy who, he was wealthy. He was in the garment business. His name was Alvin Duskin. And he started researching the correlation between the amount of money spent on a political campaign and the votes that came in. And it was very depressing.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
Richard, it's been a wonderful conversation. We've got to wind it up for tonight. Thank you for thank you for a very scintillating conversation on a Friday evening.
What's that?
Thank you for a very scintillating conversation on a Friday evening.
I'm still licking my wounds over this this internet.
Yeah, but I think you've got a different way to look at it, and I think perhaps the guy you need to make contact with the guy in England.
Well, if he will answer my emails, he's been avoiding me.
Well, that's yeah.
But yeah, I want to find out because I don't know what these people have been saying about me, but he says he's been inundated with negative stuff.
Ish.
You know, and again, before we part, I just want to say, Jim, get off that speakerphone.
Message delivered.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Richard.
Good night, Bob.
Bye now, and have a great weekend.
Good night, Isis.
Oh, yes, indeed. And she's in here. She's being good this time. Shoot me an email because I've got Lottie's FM transmitter plan ready to go to you.
Cool.
Okay. All right, later.
Bye, Bob.
Bye now.